Hall, Representative Workhorse, come to order. First on the agenda is House File 1934. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm going to be brief because there's several people here that have driven from all over Minnesota. House File 1934 is a robotics bill, and it really complements the work that Representative Lee is doing to make sure that we have computer science in our K through 12 settings. This robotics is really important in terms of high school, making sure that we have a workforce path, innovations around healthcare, healthcare procedures. We have people from robotics going into those industries, as well as agriculture, making sure that we have self-guided tractors, as well as the manufacturing industry. And so with that, Mr. Chair, this the bill before you appropriates $3 million, and it makes it into a competitive process if we adopt the A1 amendment.
We don't have quorum.
Oh, okay.
So we're going
to... So I'll testify.
We'll make motions.
Okay. Mr. Chair, can I go to my testifiers?
Yep, please.
Thank you.
Proceed to the testifying table, identify yourself for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Are you going to just, Mr. Chair, I'm going to have about six of them are just going to say where they're from and their name, just so that the committee understands the breadth, and then we'll have one student that will testify.
All right.
So go ahead and, are you testifying or are you just... Okay, yep, so just say where you're from.
I'm Anna Stromberg, and I'm from Andover, Minnesota, from Legacy Christian Academy.
Hi, I'm Kayla Greenis. I'm from Becker, Minnesota, and I'm representing Team 4607.
I am Gregory Headley from 4607, from Becker, Minnesota.
I am George Rierat. I'm representing Team 1816, the Green Machine, from Edina, Minnesota.
My name is Ethan Murphy, and I'm on Team 2530 from Rochester, Minnesota.
Hi, I'm Nathan Nelson. I am from Rochester, Minnesota, representing Team 2530.
Hi, I'm John Nielsen. I'm from Becker, Minnesota, and I'm representing Team 4607.
Okay.
Welcome, and thank you for all being here today. We're looking forward to hearing more about what you're doing and how we can support you. So please proceed with your testimony.
So like I said, I am John Nielsen. In front of you, this board shows all of the teams from Minnesota. There are currently four teams representing Minnesota right now. So I'm on Team 4607. When I started FRC or FIRST, I didn't really know what I was going to be expecting. I kind of thought, you know, fun robotics challenge, you know, something to fill up my free time. But kind of instantly, I was taught respect, responsibility, and teamwork, and as well as FIRST goals and values of gracious professionalism, as well as cooperation. As my journey progressed through FIRST, I really learned the importance of what FIRST does and how it changes people's lives. I'm the build lead on our team, as well as the lead pick crew member, and a judge talker, so I talk with judges and all sorts of people, as well as make important decisions on my team for the hopes of winning the competition itself. All of these opportunities that I have been blessed with have led me to further increase my interest in the engineering field, as well as the STEM field. I don't think I'd be where I am right now without FIRST. I've always had a kind of interest in mechanical stuff, building stuff, but without FIRST, I really don't know where that would have been. And joining FIRST has kind of just changed my life. It's given me opportunities to work with engineers, designers, contractors from all over, from all walks of life, as well as be able to connect with sponsors, tour their facilities, see what they do through their everyday life, and kind of get real-world experience and kind of show me what it would be to work in that kind of a field. So through all of that and all the experiences that FIRST has given me, I have decided that I'd like to pursue higher education, and I'd like to become a mechanical engineer once I'm done with high school.
Thank you for sharing your story. Representative Wilson, you have another question?
I'm Nicole Shaw, so I'm the regional director of FIRST Robotics.
Sit on the testifying table, identify yourself for the record.
My name is Nicole Shasso. I'm the regional director for FIRST Robotics Competition, which is the high school level of FIRST. And I am simply here to answer questions about the proposal that we have helped with the group with. But I also just really want to make sure you hear our impressive students. So I'm here for you.
All right. We now have a quorum, so I will move. You have an amendment. If you could quickly go over your amendment so we can adopt it, Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the amendment is as a result of actually working with Representative Harder. VEX is a competitive robotics team in high school in Greater Minnesota, and I wanted to make sure that this could be a bipartisan bill, so I adopted their amendment.
All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The bill is amended. And any discussions on the bill? Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Vang and Representative Ellison. I thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate working together on this. And I have a letter from a teacher that I would just like to read for the group. And it comes from Paula Mortensen, who is a teacher at ISD 500. It says, "First, thank you for this chance to proudly represent VEX Robotics, a program so extremely important to our youth and the future growth chances to build out our workforce. I'm a high school science educator and have coached VEX Robotics teams for 10 years and have witnessed firsthand the impact this platform has had. As an educator, I've sat on meetings for a couple of decades with professionals and business owners all wanting the same outcomes, a pathway to encourage our youth into STEM fields and engage them in career options. We've come a long way in getting that pipeline established, but we need more help for the funding, so we thank you for that. Our robotics program is part of a small rural school district, approximately 500 students, K through 12, in southern Minnesota, between Austin and Rochester. This year, we've had 70 students in the robotics program from 4th to 12th grade and have great diversity within the program. This platform is completely student-centered, as we guide and point the direction for complex problem-solving strategies and critical thinking opportunities, and let the students flourish as they figure out the solutions just as we would want them to do at the next level. We are super competitive and have sent teams to worlds for the past 7 years at regional, state, and world competitions. Students are getting introduced to companies, professionals as they interact and interview, so the adults see not only the technical and problem-solving abilities these team members have, but also those soft skills that will fit into any career option, from entering directly into the workforce all the way to higher-level graduate programs. So I thank you for that. Thank you very much.
Any further discussion? Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to say thank you as well for making this amendment possible. This is 175 students in just the Mankato area school district that lost benefits. So thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Edelson, thank you for this. It's a great program. There's a lot of schools are, you know, kind of getting into this, sometimes partnering up, and to see the collaboration there with that. And if I heard one of your testifiers correctly, he's Nathan Nelson also. So it's kind of a little bit unusual to have two Nathan Nelsons in the same room at the same time. But, you know, thank you for coming in today, and congratulations on the work that you've done through this program.
Further discussion? Closing remarks, Representative Hudson.
I just thank the committee for your hopefully support of including this in the omnibus bill. These competitive grants will really help our, we have a workforce shortage, and really being able to look at getting more people in the manufacturing and robotics and agriculture in this area is going to be really helpful. So thank you so much.
I will renew my motion that House File 1934 as amended be laid over possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Edelson. Next is House File 2356, Representative Hussein, Sanan Foundation. Welcome to the committee, Representative Hussein. Hear your bell, Representative Hussein.
Thank you, and good to be back here. Chair Jean and member of committees, thank you. House File 2356, is seeking employment and economic development for grant for Sana Foundation. Their mission is to empower youth by supporting and promoting educational attention to school after school program and supporting improving lives by providing program to strengthen physical health and a social emotional development and united community by advancing diverse equity and community well-being. Sana Foundation has a good track record, has been working within metro area Twin Cities and empowering for our youth and empowering for our communities. I do have a testifier, executive director with me today, Tony Sana. I would like to yell for him to be saying a few words.
Welcome to committee, Mr. Sana. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the community. Thank you for having us. My name is Tony Sana and CEO of the Sana Foundation, and I've brought one of our young men with us for questions if anyone has one afterwards. You know, we weren't always doing or thought we were doing workforce development as traditionally, but then we realized it was really human development. During COVID, we partnered with Ramsey County, and they really invested in our youth. We were able to start a food program that actually delivered the food to over 3 million pounds of food a year. And we did that by hiring youth from within our community. And we found that they were the greatest connector to the local communities, especially communities of color. When resources were not everywhere, we were able to get them to them. So we've built this program in investing in our youth, and we really know that there's a need in the summer programming, so we want to use what we have and leverage this. We've since then got a $1 million federal earmark to start the program, and so we want to be able to keep it going. The SANA model is a dual-track model, so there's two sets of outcomes. So your investments gets doubled. The jobs that we hire youth for all have a community benefit. Whether they're in youth development, facility and maintenance management, or nutritional services. These are intense summer jobs where they get to learn to be leaders Monday through Thursday. They work hard intensely, and then on Friday they have, we call it career day. We visit different Minnesota companies, large and small, and so they get career exploration, as well as what some people call soft skills, but we call universal skills. SEL competence, showing up on time, self-confidence, grit. And I can tell you this works. With this funding, we'd be able to support 80 to 100 youth per year for the next 3 years, nearly full-time in summer jobs, and year-round paid learning opportunities and supportive services. We know that we can build people up, anything that can happen. And you know, we also are expanding this summer with some of the federal funding to St. Cloud and Moorhead. So we are looking to invest in greater Minnesota in areas where we have partnership, because we know that the model works and there's other communities that want to partner. Lastly, I'll say investing in our organization is a good thing. We have a good track record of being fiscally efficient and responsible with your dollars. And there's no reason why we shouldn't grow as a leader in the community of doing that. And as I said, it works. If you have any questions, this young man came to us at 14 years old as a step-up worker in the city of Minneapolis. And then he kept coming back. And through that support, he went to college, got his degree in political science, and graduated December this year. He decided that he wanted to continue to give back to the community. So now he started 2 weeks ago with the Sana Foundation as a community coordinator. So this is Faydon, if you have any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Would your student like to testify?
If you Yeah, it was late, but he would love to say a few words, or if there's any specific questions, he would be the subject matter expert.
Good morning.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, Mr. Chair. Hello, committee. My name is Faidan Urakondo. I am originally from Togo, West Africa, and I currently in Minneapolis.
Tell your story.
Oh, well, I've been, as mentioned before, I've been with the Sana Foundation since the age of 14. I started as a youth worker, a youth coach, doing the summer program through Step Up. I've continued on through then, and then when I got into college, I was came back in the summer and worked as well through AmeriCorp. And after I graduated, I decided to come back and become a full-time employee and help other students like me, other kids like me, get job opportunities and be able to advance themselves in the community as well.
Thank you for sharing your story. First member, Representative Weems.
Thank you, Chair Zhang, Representative Hussein, as well as Mr. Faidan and Mr. Sana. My question is for Mr. Faidan. You said you started at 14. I mean, it's pretty impressive that your organization, this has been a combination sort of question or statement, is I am just curious about the returnees. How many of your students that you impact from year to year, if there's a cohort of 101 year, how many return in the subsequent year and continue that journey with your organization? And then how many become mentors like Mr. Faidan? So kind of a two-part question.
I will answer that because he might know. Well, you can answer because he knows some questions.
Well, speaking personally from the coaches that I've been able to work with, we have a good amount. I can't give you the exact number, but there's a lot of coaches that I recognize from summer to summer, and every time we do get a turnout of new coaches because we work with Step Up and they provide us with some of our workers as well. But every time at the end of summer, most of our coaches decide, oh, I really like this. I want an opportunity to come back. They send us emails saying, hey, how do I get involved in a different way? That way I can come back and work as a coach as well. Personally, I know Kylie is a coach that's wanted to come back all the time, and she's still working with us through the summer as well. So you do get a pretty good turnout.
Sorry, would the testifier identify yourself again, and do you spell out your name for record?
Oh, my name is Faidan Urakondo.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I would say it's about 50% returning, and part of what we're doing when we start with youth under 18, it's career exploration. So some kids get assigned to us, and really might not want to work outside. But we teach them youth development practices, and we visit each company every week. So at the end of the day, we're sort of shaping their passion to help them figure out what they want while putting dollars in their pockets, keeping them off the streets. But the life skills is the thing that's really different. We believe if we can teach you universal skills, eventually somebody will teach you the technical skills. But you need to be able to get to a job, be on time, and have EQ and social competencies to be able to survive in today's workplace.
Representative Weems.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. And just a follow-up, that's impressive, a 50% return rate. I think what that shows is that you're really instilling in the youth that you have a commitment to community. And I'm impressed that you're reaching out to communities outside the Twin Cities directly, so St. Cloud, and I think you said Moorhead, and that's good. I think the more we have that type of relationship that brings people back, and Faidan, your return to help mentor other young people, that's great. So thank you very much.
Oh, sounds like you're going to have yourself as a co-author too, right?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Rep. Hussein, for the spell. Thank you, Mr. Sine. And I didn't catch your name, the young man.
Faidan.
Faidan. Thank you for coming back to give back. I think I've said in this space, our young people need real models. They don't need role models. Role models are people that you see on TV. Real models are people that have real impact in your life, and that's what our young people need. And I am familiar with your work, Mr. Sine. I I'm a big supporter of you. I'm a huge fan of you because of the work that you're doing and the impact that you're leaving behind and the footprint for this young people to have, successful careers, to have a positive outlook of life. Young people who are in the most vulnerable neighborhoods who don't see people that look like them that are becoming somebody, you coming back and trying to instill that hope and saying that there is opportunities out there. You can be whatever you want. This is programming like this is what we need to help our young people because it does take a village to raise one kid. So thank you.
Representative Nelson, I see you raised your hand earlier. Representative Brandt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Sana, and Representative Hussein for having this bill in our committee today. I think it's a really important bill. It looks like a lot of good has been done. Representative Chair Hassan talked a little bit about being role models, and I think that that's really important. And in with that also is this A word that we should use more often here at the legislature, accountability. And in the back page here, one of your program partners is 3M. And I would actually caution you with partnering with them in the future, knowing that they cause severe harm in a lot of communities across Minnesota with the dumping of PFAS and damaging the water quality of those communities. That, to me, does not look like a good role model to work with. Furthermore, evidence in the lawsuit in 2018 showed that they knew since the 1950s with lab rats that these PFAS were actually bioaccumulative in humans and rats and didn't actually disclose or stop making billions of dollars in the process. And so role models are really important. Accountability is really important. And I just wanted to make mention of that today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. We will look more into that. We have board members that work there that teach technical skills, so we understand, and we have a community center on the east side, and I don't want to start a public spat with 3M on the record, but there's a lot of things we agree with them, and there's a lot of companies that do good and bad, but that is recognized, and we hear that. We also partner, like in St. Cloud, we partner with the local police in a program, so we partner with the police here as well. So we really believe in being bipartisan, building bridges, and looking at the good and how we do, but accountability is big, and we also, a big part of what we do at the camps is they have this thing called the Green Stick Army, and we've convinced six-year-olds to fight over cleaning up the park. So every day, a group of kids gets to be part of the Green Stick Army, and they go and they get to clean the park with these green sticks that pick up trash, and they leave it cleaner than we left it, and that is part of our sustainability plan.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate for giving us the opportunity. And Representative Hassan, you are right. But Tony Sana is coming back to our community and providing more leadership, and that is we don't see often. We see a lot of superstars who they move out of Minnesota. But he's here with us in this cold weather and trying to help our kids and to boost in their society. So thank you for doing this, and I appreciate it if we can all support this good cause for our youth.
I will renew my motion to House File 2356, the late over possible inclusion. Thank you, Mr. Sana and Representative Hussein. Next bill is House File 2519, another Representative Hussein bill, Youth Prize. I will move that House File 2519 be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Hussein, do your bill.
Thank you, Judge Sean, and committee members. Here, House File 2519, which is continued to important investment the state of Minnesota has made since 2017, ensuring African youth prepare for successful transition into the state workforce place. This organization that I see is Youth Rise in Kitchuk. It's good to see sometimes organization partnerships and working together to improve our youth and empowering. Both organizations works in the whole state of Minnesota and greater Minnesota metro area, and a mentorship for our youth, not only providing that job skills, training, and enhance long-term economic self-sufficiency. So I have a testifier right next to me, and I would like to yell for my first testifier.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Zhang and committee members. My name is Wokey Freeman, and I'm the Senior Operations Officer for Youth Prize. This is a new position that was established in 2022 to address the increased growth and complexity of Youth Prize as the only youth-centered, statewide, nonprofit intermediary dedicated to increasing equity with and for Minnesota's indigenous, low-income, and racially diverse youth. As an intermediary, Youth Prize manages and re-grants public and private funds, which means we shoulder a significant compliance burden and work to build the capacity and ensure the compliance of our subgrantees. We have strong leadership and a phenomenal program team that oversees and executes these important tasks. Our grants and compliance officer spent 18 years working for the state of Minnesota. Since our inception and within the last 6 years, we have successfully managed several complex federal, state, and local government contracts. We have learned a lot and increased our capacity to manage these resources appropriately. In fact, Youth Prize has distributed over $50 million. Prior to joining Youth Prize, I served as assistant city manager for the city of Brooklyn Park for nearly 7 years. And before that, I worked at the University of Minnesota for 12 years, where I traveled around the state of Minnesota with the president of the U, engaging with constituents. And I served as assistant executive director and director of operations and programs at UROC, the U's Urban Research and Outreach Engagement Center. And throughout my career, I have seen firsthand the challenges that many young people in our African immigrant communities face regarding access to culturally competent career and workforce development opportunities. I am proud that Youth Prize has been instrumental in helping to meet that critical need within the East African immigrant community. In 2022 alone, Youth Prize subgrantees served 1,799 youth by providing various job placement, educational, work readiness training, career planning, and mentoring services, as you will see on our one-pager that you all should have. As a West African woman, I am excited this session to see the scope of this funding increasing to include our other African immigrant communities as a natural expansion based on what we are hearing as a need from the larger community. We also have seen more organizations requesting grants. We have received double the amount in requests for just the East African grant, for about $3 million for the $1.4 million that we actually received. We know there's a need and a desire for creating culturally competent bridges for youth workforce activity serving other African immigrant communities in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have another testifier representative of the scene?
Yeah, Muhammad Fire.
Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for granting us the opportunity to present this vital bill before you. I would like to express my gratitude to our Representative Hussein for his leadership and advocacy in terms of bringing this bill to your attention. My name is Mohamed Farah. I serve as the Executive Director of KJOG, a nationally recognized Somali youth development organization headquartered in Minneapolis. We are dedicated to enhancing the lives of Somali American youth by utilizing the elements of education, mentorship, employment, and the arts. Established in 2007, our mission is to provide community-based and culturally specific programs and services to youth and their families through education, the arts, and economic development. As a statewide organization that primarily works with the East African community across our state, we focus our efforts on the development of young people and their families in making them as economically sufficient as possible, providing an avenue of employment and setting career pathways is the center of what we do. and we love doing that. We believe we have the role to play in creating a more diverse workforce, starting with our youth. Our East African Youth at Work program creates a two-way opportunity. We help youth gain on-the-job experience, and we also help employers create a workplace that is more culturally aware. We combat workplace discrimination by building relationships with respected employers and giving them practical ways of creating a more welcoming multicultural work environment. The East African Youth at Work program built job skills for East African youth across our state and positioning them for employment success through internship placements, career exploration, soft skill development, and mentorship. All participants who have successfully completed our program received career assessment and exploration services, an individualized work plan, and paid internships or job placement. Over the years, over 700 youth have completed our program. So far, they have sought in various careers such as information technology, health sector, accounting, business management, marketing, business administration, public service, and social work case management. Providing hands-on training is an essential part in the program. These trainings improve their productivity, build their capacity, and build their knowledge and skills that are needed in various industries. Examples of these trainings include, but not limited to, certified nursing assistant or CNA, Java coding, web design, graphic design, digital marketing, data administration, and AWS training coding. With the support of this committee, Mr. Chair, we can continue to do some amazing work throughout our state. This committee and the state of Minnesota have partners like Youth Prize and Kajog, who have been on the ground for many years. This committee understands the racial inequalities that exist in Minnesota. I cannot stress enough the work that is before us. I would like to express my appreciation to you, Mr. Chair, and all committee members, and also Representative Hussein. Thank you so much again.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, if you allow me, I have another testifier, Executive Director, Dean.
Welcome to the committee. Identify yourself for record and proceed with the testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, members of this committee. My name is El Kamati Dien. I am the executive director of the Organizations of Liberians in West Africa and in Minnesota. We are a West African community. We have at least over 40,000 Liberians in the state of Minnesota. Like the previous person I just testified, there is a growing need for our community members to have these services, especially our youth. As an executive director in our community, I've seen firsthand the challenges that we have for our youth. We have a community center that we run 5 different programs. We have the after-school program, youth mentorship, elder program. We also have navigation assistance program where we have our community members access city and federal assistances. More importantly, during the pandemic, our community was disproportionately impacted from the COVID. We have also expanded our services in culturally based workforce development. Our challenge remains the resources. We do not have the resources to have the young people have access to the bigger American dream. And for that, it becomes very strenuous. Even our workforce development program, the city of Brooklyn Park and the city of Brooklyn Center sponsor that. So if people that live outside of Brooklyn Park and Brooklyn Center cannot access a program. And the healthcare industry in the state of Minnesota, as you all know, the African community have a huge share in the workforce. So we have this workforce development program where we have people are trained, culturally specific training, to do the CNA, the TMA, and the nurses. But we are lacking resources. We have a stock load of applicants that cannot access the program and training because we lack the funds. So only people and residents of Brooklyn Park and Brooklyn Center can access that. So what happened to the rest of them? there is a huge West African community out there that need those services and need it. In our community, we have gun violence, we have drugs, we have gangsterism. We have a program in our community center to be able to help the young people. We have the facility, we have the volunteer, we lack the resources. And like I said, in the city of Brooklyn Park, if you were to only help train 50 students to redevelop their skills and have them in the workforce, each of the students making about $30,000 a year for nothing, you times that by 50, it benefit the community, it benefit the individual, and it help the people to pay taxes. Reverse that. If you don't do that, what happens? They do not go to school, they do not have a job, and they take the easy way. They go to either drugs or guns. And it costs the city and the state far more money to do that. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to say. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you.
Mr. Dean. Discussion. Representative Hutter.
Thank you, Chair Zhang, Representative Hussein. Very interesting project that you have here. My question is, the previous bill that you had, the people that came, they had a list of wonderful companies that they work with, Minnesota made. Do you work with any partners within your group?
Representative Hussein, or?
I would yell for Mohammed, Executive Director.
Yeah, I can name, and I can send out a list of all the employees that we've worked with at Cajoke and our partners across the state. Just example of it is the company, the owners of Mall of America, and then some of the businesses within Mall of America that provide not only internships but job placements. Outside of that, we've worked with different various clinics and hospitals across the Twin Cities. And I can send out all the list of the names if you like.
Mr. Farr, if you can follow up with Ms. Harder on that. Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. Thank you for that. I appreciate hearing that. The previous group that was here, again, I'm going to say there are some wonderful companies here. In fact, one that was talked about, I worked for. And they were very good to their employees, and I'm sure that you are good to your employees, too. So if you can share that list, that'd be fantastic. Thank you.
I will do that.
Further discussion. Representative
Hassan. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Rep. Hussein, and thank you to the testifiers. I'm looking at the latest Minnesota demographics report that's out, which I encourage everybody to read. And the African community has some of the lowest, earnings and some of the worst disparities, and notably 50% of the African immigrants are younger than the age of 18. So investing in youth is a crucial thing. I am familiar with both of the organizations, Kijok, as well as Youth Prize, and have seen the work that you do in the community. I will say in this space once again that our young people need our support in order to be successful members and contributing members of our society. And if they don't get that support that they need today, we're going to end up supporting them for the rest of their life. So it's either we invest a dollar and get $10 in return, or we invest nothing and pay $100 later. So it's up to us what we want to do with youth, but it's always good to hear young people who are working with young people, because they are the future of this state. They are our future workforce. They are our future leaders. And thank you for the work that you're doing with young people.
Thank you. Closing remarks. Representative Hussein. This is for the silver gilling.
I think I have not much to say, but I'm here to empower youth, and it's time for us to invest in our youth. And as they're growing up in this country, I went through a lot of difficult challenges and did not have mentorships. So if we could get equipment right now, kids, I could do better and well-being in the future. Thank you for having me here.
Thank you, Representative Sina. I renew my motion on House File 2519 be laid over for conclusion. Thank you, folks, for being here. Next is House File 459. Representative Welgemont.
Thank you.
I will move the House File 459 be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Welgemont, to your bill.
Well, thank you very much, Chair Zhang and members of the committee. It's great to be back before you this afternoon. And I'm very excited to present to you today House File 459, which is a bill to appropriate $9 million in additional state support to be added to the base funding for Centers for Independent Living. Mr. Chair and members, the eight Minnesota Centers for Independent Living provide types of services and supports that make it possible for Minnesotans with a disability to live an independent life. CIL services are consumer-controlled, community-based, cross-disability, and non-residential, and are designed and operated within local communities. They serve people of all ages and all types of disabilities. And they're not just any nonprofit, Mr. Chair, they're actually created through statute. So we, as a legislature, have a unique obligation to give them adequate funding. But unfortunately, Mr. Chair, it has been over 30 years since CILs received any kind of substantial funding increase. Now is the time to invest in these critical services for Minnesotans with disabilities. Not only is it the right thing to do morally, but Mr. Chair, it also makes sense fiscally. By keeping people out of high-cost institutions and giving them the skills and the support that they need to be able to live independently and stay in their homes, we have an estimate that CILs represent a savings in state Medicaid dollars of just under $70 million. So this is a great investment. Just looking at the numbers, it's a great investment in our Minnesotans with disabilities, and I urge your full support. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would like to turn it over to my testifier.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Zhang and members. I am Kara Ruff. I'm the Executive Director of Independent Lifestyles, one of the Centers for Independent Living located in Sauk Rapids, Minnesota, serving central Minnesota. I'm also the legislative liaison for Minnesota Association of Centers for Independent Living, which is comprised of the eight centers that are charged with serving the state of Minnesota. We are here today to ask for your urgent and timely assistance with House File 459, seeking $9 million to be added to our base funding for the eight organizations in Minnesota. Centers for Independent Living are statutory nonprofit organizations, and by providing the $9 million, you are helping to fulfill the statutory work that we're required to do by state law in being able to serve more people than our capacity currently allows. People with disabilities don't know discrimination. It doesn't discriminate. It includes all races, all economic statuses, all genders, and can hit any one of us at any time. But the issue of disability has not been taken very seriously. It's been put on the back burner in our society, except, of course, for the approximately 15 to 20% of people in a population who have one or more disabilities. As I share our information, I respectfully ask you to consider these scenarios, because there's scenarios that we deal with every day, and it will give you a better understanding of why Centers for Independent Living are so crucial. God forbid you leave here today and have a car accident and learn you'll never walk again. You'll need to relearn all activities of daily living. You cannot go home until your home is made accessible. You have no idea how to access benefits or resources, and you fall into a deep depression, unable to cope with your new disability. You're unable to work, your marriage falls apart, and you've lost your will. Or consider this, your child is born with developmental disabilities and must someday learn to live on their own, or they'll become institutionalized. perhaps your brother served proudly in the military only to come back with PTSD and such extreme anxiety that he is unable to function daily. He becomes homeless and needs help with all of his daily living tasks. Your cousin obtained a traumatic brain injury removing ice from his roof. In order to live on his own, he needs to learn how to cook, clean, pay bills, and communicate effectively, utilize transportation, and needs home modifications in order to be able to remain in his home. Your neighbor develops a mental illness and becomes homeless and loses her ability to carry out daily living skills effectively. She needs help with daily living skills, paying bills, finding housing, utilizing transportation, accessing benefits, establishing supports, and has no one to help her. God forbid if any of these situations or any similar situations should befall you or your family, I guarantee you, you would thank your lucky stars to have a fully functioning and funded Center for Independent Living in your region. Those are just a few of the scenarios that we work with each and every day. Centers for Independent Living are a one-stop shop. We provide independent living skills training, accessibility services, peer mentoring, information and referral, advocacy, socialization and supports, and much, much more in accordance with our respective regions. We are community-based, consumer-controlled, so 51% of our staff and board must be people with disabilities so that we're governed by those that we serve. And we're nonprofits that serve every type of disability from birth to death, so physical, cognitive, mental, emotional, chemical, sensory, all disabilities are being able to be served by Centers for Independent Living. And we provide the wide array of services that are customized to each individual's needs to help them achieve the greatest level of independence possible. There is no other service model like this, Mr. Chair. For the past 3 decades, 8 Centers for Independent Living have been asked to provide services to people of all disabilities in the entire state of Minnesota with between $1 and $3 million. We have been given a 5th mandated service to provide also without additional funding. Again, not just one type of disability, but all, and from mild to severe, from birth to death in every county in Minnesota. An independent study we conducted 6 years ago showed that Centers for Independent Living need at least $18.2 million to adequately accomplish this. We are currently at $3 million. We know that you have many issues before you, and we know that you have to make tough decisions, but we ask you that to give this the justice and consideration that's desperately needed. Historically, we have further segregated and marginalized people with disabilities with subminimum wage employment, group homes, institutions, and other indignities against their will. But what is really baffling is that all of those options cost significantly more than the services that we provide at a fraction of the cost and actually empower people to live with dignity, respect, and choice. It does not make sense to keep putting the cart before the horse. Unlike any other service model, we provide services and supports in all areas of life that are consumer-controlled. We bring services to the most remote areas of the state, to the most populated. Even during the pandemic, Centers for Independent Living stayed on the front lines, ensuring people with disabilities were not abandoned and were provided with the supports and services that are critical. Just in the past year alone, we served thousands of individuals and relocated 697 out of institutions or nursing homes. In addition to that, we prevented the necessity for that for another 1,303 individuals. Without even counting those, we saved the state approximately $68 million in Medicaid dollars for an investment of $3 million. There are still thousands of individuals across the state desperately waiting for these services. This is urgent. This isn't a want. This is a desperate need. There are thousands of Minnesotans who can live independently with community-based supports from us, and we can restore dignity and choice and save millions and millions of dollars for the state of Minnesota. I cannot, Mr. Chair, imagine a bigger win for 20% of our population and for the state of Minnesota. We bring individuals from dependency to independence, assist them in obtaining education, homes, parenting skills, skills to live on their own, employment, financial stability, advocacy, and so much more. We have been waiting decades for the help we need. This is a dire situation in our state, and we're here with a solution that actually saves taxpayers millions of dollars and produces real results. We ask that you give people with disabilities the respect and attention they deserve by funding what actually works. You can see on the scatter map here before I close where the services were provided last year. You can also see the gaping spaces throughout the state where we simply could not meet the great demand because we don't have the funding. This is a crisis, and we desperately need your help to become adequately funded. We did submit to you a video testimonial of one of our consumers, Corporal John Schneider, which I hope you will all watch because it's very powerful. And lastly, I would just like to say people with disabilities across Minnesota are depending on you to give them the respect, choice, and resources that they've been waiting decades for in Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for hearing us today, and thank you, Representative Wolgamont, for being our chief author.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. thank you, Representative Wolgamont. This is a good bill. Ms. Ruff, great testimony. Very impassioned, and I can hear you. I feel it. I want to say this should be an easy one for our committee. I wanted to ask you the question, though. This is a large amount of an increase from what you're currently getting. I think you mentioned that you feel woefully underfunded in the past. Is this, if you were to get this, is this going to just maintain your base, or you actually Can you expand it further with this kind of an influx if this were to happen?
Mr. Chair, this would actually allow us to expand quite significantly. Again, the state studies 6 years ago said we needed $18 million to serve the state. This would, added to our base, would bring us to 12. We've had to close many of our satellite offices around the state because they're just too costly to operate. And so this would allow us to get more staff, first of all, and to expand into some of those more remote areas with satellite offices. We would definitely have a great influx in services, absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. Great work. I'm happy to support this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A quick question. So I live in Smiles territory in southern Minnesota in Mankato, and they are just doing everything. Like, there's an event almost daily and sometimes multiple events. Like, they really want to encourage activity within the community of the greater Mankato area, and I really appreciate that. Of this $9 million, I think that was the ask, or the $9 million per year. $9 million per year, so $18 million over the course of the next biennium. How much of that goes to facilities? How much of that would go to wages? Just give us maybe a ballpark of what we're looking at for $18
million. Mr. Chair, Representative, that's a hard question to answer because it will be divided among the 8 Centers for Independent Living in Minnesota, and then it's up to each organization how they spend that money, but it is mandated to be spent on our core services, which are independent living skills, peer mentoring, accessibility, information and referral, and advocacy, and then nursing home relocation or relocation services.
Thank you very much. I just I wish you luck, and I know that, like I said, you do a lot for all folks across the state. I only see it in my particular part of the world, but you know, I think from the standpoint, we always have these challenges, right, with workforce. That's why we're talking about workforce in this committee. But, you know, the challenge is it's been tough to make sure we get the correct amount of wages for the jobs that these heroes really do. So
yes.
I appreciate you being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. Representative Wolgamart, thank you for that testimony. That was beautiful. You probably don't know, I have several years of working with individuals who have disabilities. Very challenging and can be very rewarding. And I worked with a gal once. She worked at a facility with people with disabilities. She was the worker helping them. And she had an accident, changed her life.
Mm-hmm.
And now she was receiving the services.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so interesting to hear from her. Life before, when she was providing the services, now life after, and what that funding doesn't cover.
Yes.
State requires it. You have to provide it, but then the funding doesn't come, and that seems to be an age-old question. It would be nice to work that out. And so if there is anything out there to help make life easier in terms of can we roll back some statutes that help people with disabilities, I'd be more than happy to work with you on that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to present House File 459. I just really want to thank Ms. Ruff and her team and the incredible work that they do for Minnesotans with disabilities all throughout our state. Mr. Chair, this is such a good investment in dollars. It's the right thing to do. It's the fiscally responsible thing to do. I urge your full consideration for House File 459 as you consider your finance omnibus bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members.
Thank you, Ms. Ruff. Thank you, Representative Ogumano. I will renew my motion to House File 459. Be laid over for possible inclusion. Next is House File 2109, Representative Wogelmont. I will move that House File 2109 be laid over for possible inclusion. Do you have any amendments? No, you don't. That's good. Through your bill, Representative Wogelmont.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to present House File 2109. Which is a bill to appropriate $1 million in fiscal year 24 and $1 million in fiscal year 2025 for a grant to the Redemption Project to provide employment services to adults leaving incarceration, including recruiting, educating, training, and retaining employment mentors and partners. Mr. Chair and members, I am so proud to bring this bill forward today to for continued support of the Redemption Project. Last session, our legislature appropriated funds that went to the Redemption Project for them to bring the programming that they've been using successfully in the federal prison system into our state system. And we have seen great success with this. They've done a lot to reduce recidivism through meaningful employment, and their programming has been growing into more state prisons. And with this necessary additional funding, they'll be able to serve more incarcerated individuals across Minnesota and benefit, make all of our communities safer by reducing recidivism rates. So that's what the bill does. That's why I'm bringing it forward. And with that, Mr. Chair, I have some testifiers who can shed further light on the importance of funding the appropriation that's laid out here in House File 2109.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Dwight Tostenson. I'm the CEO and co-founder of the Redemption Project. Our mission at the Redemption Project is reduce recidivism, but through meaningful employment. Nationally, 2 out of 3 people released from prison return within 3 years. Our vision is to flip these statistics on their head. Our proven model, developed by our former inmates, can achieve that goal. From our work in the federal prison system, we have 48 individuals who have been released from prison. Of those, only 3 returned to prison, 2 of which were on technical violations, and now we have initiated our program into the state system. Our 3-stage program works to educate through a rigorous 14-week academic class, advocate for the inmates to be matched with employment mentors and partners to hire them upon release, and thirdly, to support them as they transition from prison into society, which we know can be very difficult. In these transitions, we continue to assist them working with their employment mentor and life mentors, while we also help connect them to resources to assist with other barriers like transportation, housing, and addiction. We also work with employers to educate them on the benefits of second chance hiring and the best practices model. The funding in this legislation would support the second and third stages of our program, working with employers, job placement, and support of our program participants. There is not only an educational need for the inmates, we have found, but there are also educational needs for the employers around second chance hiring and the best practices and models that employers should be using for successful second chance hiring. We are currently conducting our program with inmates in facilities in Stillwater, Lionel Lakes, and Rush City. There are about 50 men enrolled, and we have a sizable waiting list. 57% of our participants are people of color. 40% of our participants have children that are minors. Our program costs about roughly $5,000 per participant, and the average yearly cost to incarcerate someone in Minnesota is over $55,000. The result of our program leads to better lives for our participants, safer communities, economic savings, and assists in addressing our workforce shortage. We are happy to see DOC and DEED working hand in hand on these issues, and we appreciate the guidance and support we've received from both of them. Thank you for your time today. We would greatly appreciate your support of our mission by supporting this bill. I have another testifier, Tom Pippett.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and the committee. My name is Tom Pippett, and I have a very short story about my journey in the last 12 years. In 2011, I was given a 10-year sentence and incarcerated at the Federal Medical Center in Rochester, Minnesota. When I first went into prison, I thought my life was over. I was really gave up hope for any kind of future after that. It took me time to start putting my life back together. And one of the programs that helped me a great deal was the Redemption Project program. Within their program, not only did they teach us the four cardinal virtues of wisdom, courage, self-control, and justice, but for me, they also taught me to start believing in myself. And it gave me the confidence to kind of move forward in what I call my road to recovery. Another area where TRP or the Redemption Project helped me was on the employment side, employment. When I first got out of Rochester and was staying at the halfway house in on Lake Street in Minneapolis, I set up a number of job interviews. I have a good resume. I had a good educational background. I was told I had good communication skills. And each company was pleased with my wanting to join their organization until I came to the point where I broached my felony. I always wanted to be upfront about where I was and what I was doing to better myself since that time. But you could see the light kind of go out in their eyes a little bit. They thanked me so much for coming in for the interview, told me I had a great resume, and said they would get back to me one way or the other about the job. In each case, I never heard back one way or the other. But shortly after that, Dwight Tostenson and Tim Owens, the founders of the Redemption Project, reached out to me and met with me. And they had an opening, and they offered me a job. And once I got that job, I knew that I was on this road to recovery, because now I could put a roof over my head, I could feed myself, I had transportation, right? And last but not least, I could pay my taxes. I was no longer a burden on the state. I was paying my part to go forward. And that was so important to me. And I thank you so much for listening to my testimony. Thank you.
Discussion. Representative Baker. Representative Weed. And then Baker.
Oh.
I beat you.
Chairman Zhang, thank you. Speaker Pro Tem Wolgamott, it's an Aaron Gobroff for you. Mr. Torstensen and Mr. Tibbett, I'm impressed, first of all, with you, Mr. Tibbett. Your pathway through all the struggles that you had, whatever brought you to the point that you spent in prison, to me it appears you don't hold anybody else at harm. You've accepted what has occurred to you, and you're moving out through that. You talked about wisdom. You talked about courage. And I can't think of a better name for a program than Redemption. And Mr. Torstensen, you talked about some of the, what I think are just the key points of a world-class program. I just did the quick math on the recidivism rate, and it looks like it's only 6%. Every other program, or when I deal a lot with veterans through veterans courts and stuff, it's a much higher rate. So what you're doing, you've done something very well. Doing the math again, it looks like you have the capacity with this funding to assist about 200 folks that are coming out of prison. So my question is my math right? And two, is this available across Minnesota, or is this mainly just a Twin Cities type program?
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chair. The answer to that is we are currently in those three prisons. We're hoping to expand into the other prisons in Minnesota as the Department of Corrections has capacity and ability for us to move into those. So, yeah, we would, you know, our vision is to work with all prisons in Minnesota.
Representative Weems.
Chairman Zhang, thank you very much. I wish you the best. I think this is a great program, and thank you for coming and testifying today, Mr. Tibbett.
Lee Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Tostenson, again, really, really like seeing the information on the website. You've got an impressive board of directors. I looking at the collaboration, the mix of it. How often does the board actually meet with your project?
Mr. Tostenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our board meets quarterly. And are very engaged in strategic planning and helping give direction to our the direction of our organization.
Mr. Chair, thank you for that. Some boards meet once a year, and sometimes they don't. Sometimes I want to ask that question. And the other thing I want to ask about is folks that are getting out of incarceration, I work closely with in the substance use area. How quickly do you reach out to these I assume men and women coming out of incarceration, or is it mostly men? But and how much do you deal with them getting the right support to continue that journey with either, you know, living in sobriety, if that was an issue before? Does that play into a lot of what you do?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, we work with, and we actually communicate. One of the unique aspects of our program is that we transition with the individuals. We start on the inside, develop a relationship with them, and then transition with them outside. That is almost like, as they transition out. So as they demonstrate a need, we do our best to connect them to other organizations. We are focused primarily on, you know, looking at connecting them to a job. That's our mission, and we're very focused on that. There are great organizations that do other things like, you know, transportation and healthcare and housing and addiction and those kind of things, and we connect them to those organizations.
Thank you. That's it, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none. Closing statements, Representative Wolgamott.
Well, thank you again, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for the opportunity to present House File 2109. Let's take this opportunity to invest in redemption. Let's take this opportunity to make our community safer by reducing recidivism rates. Let's include this appropriation in House File 2109 in your finance omnibus bill. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Thank you to my testifiers, and I appreciate your consideration and time today.
Thank you to the testifiers and to you, Mr. Speaker, Pro Tempore. I will renew my motion to House File 2109 be laid over for possible inclusion. Next is House File 1107, Representative Sophia O'Toole.
So good to see you. Thank you for sharing your story.
I will move that House File 1107 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
Do you have an amendment? Here you go, Representative Sophia O'Toole.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1107 is a fiscal appropriation of $1.4 million annually for the SciTech internship program run by the Minnesota Technology Association, or MinTech. This is a bipartisan proposal in both bodies. Last summer, along with Senator Pratt, I was lucky to visit Miromatrix Medical, an Eden Prairie company whose mission is to eliminate the organ transplant waitlist by growing bioengineered organs. And I got to meet a number of the interns that were participating in this program, and they had only good things to say. I wish we had more time today to feature some of their stories specifically, but we know that you guys have a lot of work ahead of you, so I'll try to keep this short. I am proud to say that a number of other companies in Eden Prairie have participated in the SciTech program over the years, like Third Wave Systems, which provides physics-based CAE software and services used by aerospace, automotive, and cutting tool companies. Nuellis, a medical device company that makes the Aquadex smart flow system for ultrafiltration therapies, and Ion Concert Media, a software development company with products for the live entertainment industry. The SciTech internship program connects college students studying science, technology, engineering, and mathematics with paid internships at small and medium-sized businesses across Minnesota. Even though I am talking up a number of Eden Prairie businesses today, this is not just an Eden Prairie program, and almost one-third of the internships over the last 10 years have taken place in greater Minnesota, and 79% of those interns stayed in Minnesota after graduation. This program is open to employers with fewer than 250 employees worldwide. Minnesota students in the STEM fields who are halfway through their two-year, four-year, or graduate degree programs, and out-of-state residents attending school here in Minnesota. Data has shown that Minnesota loses more college-age residents to other states than seniors retiring out of state. The goal of this program is twofold: to attract and retain talented students to remain in Minnesota's STEM workforce after graduation, and to support small and medium-sized businesses to find the best and brightest employees. Like the variety of co-authors shows, strengthening our workforce and our economy is a bipartisan goal. And again, knowing that the committee has a lot of work to do today, I would like to now introduce Jeff Thompson, the president and CEO of MinTech and one of my constituents from Eden Prairie, to provide a brief overview of the program, and we will then stand for questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome, committee. Please identify yourself for record. Proceed.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jeff Tollefson, and I serve as president of the Minnesota Technology Association. And on behalf of all Minnesota companies that rely on access to skilled STEM talent, really thank you for your consideration of this important legislation today. The success and viability of any state economy is a function of the strength of its workforce. And the need in Minnesota for those that can solve complex problems, drive innovation, has never been greater. And Minnesota's companies, whether in healthcare, agriculture, manufacturing, financial services, or information technology, they have huge demands for STEM talent. But sadly, we're falling short in our ability to educate and connect college students that are pursuing STEM careers with meaningful opportunities. And the STEM jobs that help power Minnesota's technology-enabled businesses are some of the most in-demand and most highest-paying jobs and careers in our state. But unfortunately, Minnesota lacks a strong, diverse, homegrown talent pool from which Minnesota businesses can pull from. The skills and workforce gap results in loss of opportunity for Minnesota residents, loss of tax revenues for the state, and loss of productivity for Minnesota businesses. Over the last 10 years, we've seen firsthand the impact that these experiential learning experiences can have in the SciTech internship program as we move learning beyond the classroom into hands-on, high-quality work experiences with small businesses across our state. It's a true win-win for students and employers alike, as students get a life-changing opportunity to explore a career in the STEM field, while small employers that can't afford internship programs like larger corporations can benefit equally. And if you refer to the MinTech one-pager, the annual report that you have in your hand, and sorry about the long list of letters of support from students and employers, hopefully you'll see the value that Minnesota's modest investment in this program is having on businesses and students alike. We trust you'll see the value of a continued investment in this statewide initiative, and we thank you in advance for your investment in the future of Minnesota's innovation economy. Thank you very much, and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Discussion. Seeing none, closing remarks. Sorry.
You're moving too fast, Mr. Chair. thank you, Rep. Kitisutun, for this bill. Just quick question about this program. How do you attract diversity? In the tech world is one space where we completely left people of color, indigenous folks out. And we decided instead of investing in our own and training, you know, our people of color here, we decided, no, we're going to bring, you know, foreigners from other countries to do the work. So can you just walk through how do you attract diversity in your line of work?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We take this very seriously. And 61% of the applicants last year came from underrepresented populations in technology. That's women and individuals of color. 47% of the internship placements were also underrepresented populations. We see the demographic changes that are occurring. And if we don't invest more intentionally around making sure that we engage our communities of color in these technology jobs of the future, we're not going to have the workforce we need. So rest assured, we recruit very heavily in our urban areas and make sure that we are getting the diversity that we all aspire to see in our world.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for listening to our proposal today. I think it as you review the information that we have included in your packets, you will see what a positive impact this has had for businesses and young people who are entering the workforce across the state of Minnesota. And I appreciate your consideration for including it in the omnibus bill this year.
Mm-hmm. House File 1107 be laid over the top of the conclusion. Next is House File.
Are you up yet?
House File 2070, Representative Hassan, Project for Pride Living. And I think there's an amendment. No?
I'm trying. I have two bills, so I'm trying to.
There is not an amendment. Chair Hassan will move that House File 2070 later with a proper conclusion. Chair Hassan, to your bill.
Did you say there was an amendment, Mr. Chair?
No, there was.
Okay. I was like, wait a minute. I didn't know that. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I know we're crunch on time, so I'll be as fast as possible. Thank you for the opportunity to hear House File 2070, which is an ask for PPL's workforce training program. I feel closely connected to PPL. Not only is it in my district, but I also used to work for them once in a long time ago. It's located in the heart of my district on the Franklin Cultural Corridor. PPL is a 150-year-old organization that serves people who are in the most need of housing and employment. PPL received direct appropriations for the first time this current biennium and has been able to have a significant impact. They have used the resources to expand their career pathways, increase new enrollment in career readiness program, and launch new programs that would have been able to receive funding through existing DEED grant program. PPL is focused on the future of work and health and wealth, and is in partnering with employers to create career ladders for family-sustaining wages. 85% of the PPL graduates have a 12-month retention rate with their new employer. In a benefit cost analysis conducted by Consolidation Fund, every dollar invested in PPL's career pathways results in $9 of personal economic value, as well as decreased cost to public services in the future. With that, Mr. Chair, I have testifiers here with me, and we'll be as brief as possible.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chairman Zhang and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you guys today. My name is Antonio Carnell. I am a student of the Project for Pride and Living Diploma Connect Adult High School Diploma Program. While my path to this diploma has been a long one, I know my experience is not unique. I am here to tell you about the circumstances that led me to the program, with the hope that others in my situation will be able to benefit as I have. As a freshman at South High School in Minneapolis, I was juggling academics with the demands of outside affiliations I have become involved with. Unfortunately, the outside demands won out, and I found myself disengaged from school and failing my classes. I dropped out of Southwood on 3 completed credits. Later, I enrolled into Waseca High School's Alternative Learning Center, where I attended school sporadically until I turned 21, and then aged out of K-12 schools. At the time, after 7 years of high school, I was 6.25 credits short of the graduation requirements. A couple of years later, I tried classroom-based GED programming in Minneapolis. While I appreciate the opportunity to complete the education this way, I was frustrated at the slow pace of the program. It was for turtles, and I wanted to move like a hare. There was no flexibility to work at home or move at a faster pace, and if something came up where I needed to miss class time, there was not a good way to make up my work. In addition, I knew I wanted a diploma and not a GED, and I know everyone says they're the same, but I think an actual diploma looks better to employers and colleges, and that's what I wanted. Luckily, last summer, my Hennepin County probation officer told me about a new program in Minneapolis where I was staying in transitional housing trying to find a job. I contacted PPL and immediately enrolled, becoming one of their first students when they opened July of 2022. working with the teachers at Diploma Connect, I was told I'd be able to count my high school credits I already earned and complete the remaining courses at my own pace, and that I would get a diploma and not a GED. They gave me a laptop so I could work at home and not limited by classroom hours, and worked with me to understand the materials and finish up my assignments whenever I had problems. They even worked with my probation officer to get in touch with me when personal issues came up or my phone number has changed. And it's like I have a whole team behind me who really take the time to understand me and make the program work for any situation that comes up. I am currently working on my last assignment, which is a short essay, and I will be graduating next month. This is great timing because I just enrolled in a forestry program through Hennepin County Probation. I'm really excited about this because working outside is something I love to do, and it will be a path towards my goal of someday owning my own landscaping company. After forestry training, I'm planning on going to community college to take more classes, including some more business classes, to continue with this career. Without PPL and Diploma Connect, I don't know if I would have found an option to complete my diploma. The flexibility of the program and personal approach are what got me to this point. I'm really proud of myself for sticking with this and really happy I found this program. Now, some of my other family members are also interested, and I have been able to show them how successful they can be. I hope my words today will help you understand the importance of PPL's Diploma Connect program and all the people they can help. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Cardell.
Do we have another question?
Okay. Discussion. Representative Cipriano.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Hassan, for bringing this bill. I appreciate the work that Project for Pride and Living does generally, and it was really great, Antonio, to hear about your story. I'm also a Minneapolis South High School alum as well. The thing I really took away from your story was just about the flexibility that this program gave you, and I think this is flexibility that especially a lot of folks that are working to earn their GED or finish high school are really asking for. It makes sense to me that you didn't necessarily want to or didn't find it possible to, sit in a classroom. Having the flexibility, transitional housing, getting a laptop and having people who support you, it sounds like that was a really strong combination for you. And congratulations on your new job. That sounds very exciting. Glad you're getting to work outside.
Thank you very much.
Further discussion? Seeing none, closing statement. Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a great project. I truly believe the work that they do, and I have seen the impact of folks who have gotten help from PPL, whether it's their housing services or it's their work readiness program. I hope we can include this in our final omnibus bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I will renew my motion. Chair Hassan would renew her motion that House File 2070 be laid up work for prosperous institutions. Next is House File 2184, Representative Norris.
Can I just, I have another bill up, so I'm like, gonna kick me out and bring me back? Okay.
Representative Norris has to leave, so that we're giving him the time. Welcome to the committee, Representative Norris. I will move that House File 2184 be laid over for possible inclusion. I see that you don't have the amendments, so through your bill.
Thank you, Chair Zhang and members of the committee. It's great to be with you today. Since 2016, YDWCA Minneapolis's Workforce Development Teacher Training Program has offered a unique opportunity for individuals who are already working in education as teacher's aides or those who are new to education as a career to obtain workforce skills and preparation for CDA accreditation for early childhood education. YWCA offers equal access to its services and resources. However, it focuses strategically on serving people of color, new Americans, women, and people living in low-income households. This is a six-month cohort model with several cohorts operating at a time. In addition to twice-weekly trainings on content, Participants also receive 140 professional development hours, digital literacy training, critical workforce skills, 500 hours of ECE teaching experience, and wraparound services to address barriers to participation and work. YWCA Minneapolis works with several ECE partners and has become a trusted leader for successful pathways into early childhood education. This program has received a biennial appropriation since 2016, and so Chair Zhang, we're coming back once again with hopes of renewing that. And with that, I'll have my testifier come up.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have a couple of handouts. I don't know if those can be distributed. Wanted to defer to you.
Are they the ones
that we have? Oh, great. Yes. Never mind. Good afternoon, Chair Zhang, Vice Chair Brand, Lead Baker, and members of the committee. And thank you, Representative Norris, for bringing the bill. For the record, my name is Luna Allen Bakarian. I serve as the Public Policy Manager for YWCA Minneapolis, and I'm here to speak on House File 2184. Thank you for hearing this bill today. Whenever speaking externally, I like to state that YWCA Minneapolis is one of over 200 local associations under YWCA USA, all sharing the same mission of eliminating racism, empowering women and girls, and promoting peace, justice, freedom, and dignity for all. First off, gratitude. This program, as stated, has received state funding since 2016, and that helps make the program possible, so we appreciate your support. House File 2184 increases and renews a biennial appropriation for YWCA Minneapolis's Teacher Training Workforce Development Program, which since 2016 has been a categorically unique workforce development program, training teachers to further their careers in early childhood education and preparing to obtain Child Development Associate or CDA credentialing. The program is a 6-month cohort model supporting nearly 200 individuals last year and 565 total participants since its formation. At least 400 of those program participants left YW's program to unsubsidized employment. The program includes, as mentioned, classroom instruction, currently twice weekly, in addition to 140 hours of professional development training, 500 hours of ECE classroom experience, digital literacy training, support for CDA test prep, portfolio building, resume development, and interviewing skills. Our program prioritizes women, people of color, and those with recent immigration experiences, and as an organization that supports the increase of education and retention of teachers of color in Minnesota's workforce, this mission-aligned intersection is crucial. A standout of our program is the wraparound services design. Though instruction happens in a cohort model, trainees receive highly personalized experiences through one-to-one debriefs and case management and receive support for things like gas, transit, outdoor gear, technology, with a goal of removing barriers to work. Minnesota Community Colleges offer graduates of the program with CDA credentials, 6 credits toward their associate's degree, and we maintain partnerships that allow for seamless continued higher education if participants choose. From 2016 to 2020, the program served Hennepin, Ramsey, Anoka, Washington, and Dakota counties. From 2020 on, steady online cohorts have continued with students from Carleton, Sibley, St. Louis, Wright, and Itasca counties, and we also have a smaller portion of students from Cass, McLeod, Aiken, Pine, and Sherburne counties. YWCA Minneapolis works with several partners in early childhood education and in higher education and has become the training program of choice for several centers holding Grow Your Own programs, providing pathways for teachers. Current partners include Community Action Partnership and Head Start, Northside Achievement Zone, and more. A professional development partner working with Rasmussen and Hennepin Tech writes, quote, "When we talk about having teachers that represent the children they are teaching and being quality educators, it is due to the support and guidance that the YWCA brings to each of the candidates. The YWCA goes above and beyond to ensure that each candidate is prepared for success. This program brings value and quality to preparing each candidate to be a professional early childhood educator. I see this every time I observe them in action in the classroom." Northside Achievement Zone's ECE director writes, quote, "Northside Achievement Zone Early Childhood Education Center and the YWCA Workforce Development Program refer ECE teachers to each other since the program's inceptions. Currently, NAS and YWCA are planning future cohorts to serve more NAS community members. NAS leadership believes that the leadership shown by YWCA Workforce Development graduates has led to a stronger workforce that reflects the diversity of its community." And finally, a program participant says, quote, "When I started, I had no experience other than being being a mom. I've grown a lot in my job and learned how to be a professional teacher. I realized a lot of us work with kids because of good and bad experiences we had in the past, and we want it to be better for kids today. All of us, different ages, races, single, married, kids or no kids, we were all there because we want to work with children and be better for them, end quote. Our funding comes from DEED competitive grant funds and state biennial appropriations, which we have received since 2016. In the past, we have also received private funding localized to smaller regions, some foundation and philanthropic dollars, and some municipal funding. The biennial appropriation amounts supporting this work have fluctuated over the years, and the current ask is an increase from the most recent appropriation in 2021, but is not the highest appropriation we've received from the state in our program's tenure. This increase comes at a time when our program is operating with high demand and more opportunity than ever for regional and partnership expansion. YWCA Minneapolis's teacher training program has a noted positive track record because of its wraparound services, anti-racist and anti-bias principles, and individualized approaches centering teacher wellness. I ask for your support of House File 2184 and inclusion of this life-changing program in your omnibus bill. Thank you so much for your time and consideration.
Discussion. Representative Weems.
Thank you, Chair Jong. Thank you, Representative Norris, and Ms.
Alan Bakarian.
Alan Bakarian. That is correct. No, the great mission with YWCA. And I always sometimes get confused, YMCA, YWCA, and then I go to the song, and then I go, okay, it's not the song. It's your organization.
It's the persimmon cousin with the mission on the.
Sorry about the deferment on that. But great mission. How many either interactions or how many services or how many people will be served by this particular appropriation?
Sure. I'm looking at. Sorry, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I'm looking at Stephanie. Let me know if this is wrong. We have others others from our team here. So cohorts operate in groups of about 20, and as mentioned, last year was about 200. This is an increase in the state appropriation, which means serving more teacher participants, but with inflation and other costs rising doesn't mean we can, you know, like double the program or anything like that. But typically, we have been able to serve a couple of hundred, and we do have many, many people on the waiting list. Is there anything you'd add, Stephanie? Yeah. Also, we have a fiscal year calendar, and then there's also, you know, reporting that we do based on the calendar year, so it can be fluctuating based on that as well.
Representative Weems.
Thank you, Chairman Jong and Ms. Alan Bakarian. Appreciate that answer, and keep on doing good work. And I like that you're continuing to expand and you're hitting communities outside the metro. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Simpson Bureau.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. Thank you, Representative Norris, for bringing this bill. My question is around, I think it's great that there's, you know, hundreds served and hundreds more waiting, and that you all have a waiting list for the program. I'm just thinking about this at a time where on this committee we've been hearing a lot about workforce shortages, particularly in care positions. And so what are you all doing, I guess, to have a wait list, and what can other organizations or companies learn from that? Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. So technically, at any point, people reach out with interest in the program, and we have rolling cohorts, as mentioned, and then oftentimes, folks who reach out to our program are seeking other workforce or opportunities, or are working already as teacher aides, and so wait to be able to get more extensive, again, like a longer-term cohort model to be able to get CDA and get other ECE opportunities. That means that the wait list fluctuates. Certainly, as an organization that also runs 5 ECE centers, we know that particularly for childcare, workforce shortages are very real, and as mentioned, it's critical that we increase the diversity of providers who are taking care of the youngest Minnesotans. And so we would love to be able to operate with more staff and a bigger program, and are kind of doing our best to phase out our growth as best we can. And the greater Minnesota growth really came after cohorts were able to pivot virtually in 2020. So we've been able to continue that model.
Yeah, thank you. I guess my question is, do you think that this kind of, you know, additional training helps with either recruitment or retention?
Ms. Ellen Bickley.
Yes, absolutely. So we do pretty specific recruitment, and because of the parameters for being part of our program, there are specific income requirements for and working requirements for the household, and we do, because of our mission, prioritize amplifying this opportunity for women of color, new American women, all people, but those are our priority areas. We absolutely think that it's provided a pathway that whether folks learn about us through our other program areas, maybe they have been members of our gym or see us in the community, that they're able to maintain communication with us, and that, 400 plus more teachers in the state in the last 6 or so years are amplifying their career.
Representative Sensor Bureau. Discussion, further discussion. Representative Edmondson Yeager.
Thank you, Chair. So I also sit on the Children and Families Committee, and we have been hearing so much about how we are lacking in child care providers, which then leads to workforce shortages because now parents are staying home to take care of their kids. We've all heard that. So I just really appreciate the work that you're doing to kind of getting ready for the workforce behind the workforce. So thank you.
Seeing closing remarks, Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. I mean, I think we all know, we've seen the research about the importance of early childhood education, but we can't get more young people access to that education without the teachers and the professionals to provide that education. So this program has proven its value to the state over the years, and would urge the committee to renew its commitment to it once again this time around.
Thank you, Representative Norris, and your testifier. I will renew my motion on House File 2184, be laid over for possible inclusion. Next is House File 2258, another Representative Norris bill, Crittenden Cities, Minnesota. And I see that there is an A1 amendment. Representative Norris, if you can explain your A1 amendment.
Yes, thank you, Chair Zhang. The A1 amendment is pretty simple. It just fills in the blank appropriation. We are requesting a one-time appropriation of $3.2 million.
Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Three of those as amended. Representative Norris.
Chair Zhang, House File 2258 seeks state funding to support private contributions to career academies at the Greater Twin Cities United Way, which unites public education and employment systems so that all students in Minnesota have pathways to wealth-building and purpose-driven careers. These career pathways include access to college credit in the high school sequence, career and technical education, as well as paid work experiences. Since it launched in 2015, Career Academies has supported 20 school districts along with their community and employer partners to redesign educational opportunities in line with high-wage, high-demand career fields such as education, healthcare, manufacturing, engineering, and IT. It addresses the critical labor shortages we see across Minnesota, particularly in these high-need and high-growth fields. It intentionally invests in communities of color, low-income communities, and greater Minnesota to disrupt inequity and ensure opportunities for all Minnesotans. House File 2258 will contribute to funding for the next phase of the career academies so that every region in Minnesota has robust career pathways and a united employment and school system. All Minnesota school districts have access to the knowledge, tools, and relationships needed to strengthen career pathways in their region. K-12 and post-secondary systems are aligned toward increased access and utilization of free college credits toward zero college debt, and employers are offering supportive work experiences for the youth. So that's just kind of a high-level summary of the fantastic work that the career academies are doing throughout our state. And with that, I'll turn it over to my testifier to provide some more information.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello, everybody of the committee. My name is Kevin Martinez Herrera, and I come from St. Louis Park High School. And I grew up my whole entire life here in St. Louis Park in Minnesota. And before I start, I want to give a thanks to Mr. Chairman and everybody here on this committee. And thank you for allowing to have my voice heard today and giving me their full attention. And thank you so much. So as a senior, I am honored and proud to represent St. Louis Park High School, and which has laid the blueprint and have taken the risks and time and resources and investment in offering career pathways, readiness models in order to enable success for the children and soon to be adults like me of Minnesota. So today I really want to express the importance of how having resources and a career readiness models at my school has shaped me and other students, and how it has impacted the courses I took and experiences I developed and opportunities I could have not imagined, and present and future goals and aspirations. So part of the career pathways at my high school focuses on different fields such as computer science, marketing, arts and communication, engineering, manufacturing, and health sciences, in which students are offered unique classes and core ones in which they create schedules during our high school years in order to be prepared for college and get a sense of what it means to be in a particular field. Specifically, I want to focus today on the health sciences pathways and my very own personal experience in the healthcare in the health career programs. Freshman year, I had no idea what I wanted to do, and I had no interest in what type of field I wanted to study. And sophomore year came, and I decided to sign up for a healthcare core, one of the health sciences offered as a part of the career pathways. Having the option to have healthcare core offered at my high school, I signed up, and I was able to explore the healthcare field, learning about communication and operations within a healthcare setting, learn about patient needs, importance of staff diversity, healthcare safety, medical terminology, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, even standard precautions and legal issues in healthcare and ethics. So during this time, it's like a light bulb went on my head. This is what I want to do. This is what I want to focus in my life. Because healthcare core was valuable to me because I was able to learn new knowledge and experiences and what it meant to be in the healthcare field. And from there, I decided to pursue an interest in healthcare and medicine and pursue the pathways of health sciences from the career and readiness model offered at my school. Having been interested in ethics and racial disparities in healthcare, junior year I decided to enroll in IB History of the Americas and Revisiting Ethnic Studies, in which we looked at hidden history, systems of oppression, and past and current events through a racial lens and grew our racial consciousness. These two classes were extremely important to me because it influenced me as I dive deeper into the healthcare world and an individual who one day dreams of becoming a board-certified dermatologist and going into the healthcare and medicine profession. So during this period, 2021-2022, towards the end of the school year, being part of Latino Student Association, during one of the meetings, one of the health teachers offered, who teaches certified nursing assistant, which is part of the Korean Readiness Program, which is this bill, offered us to give a tour of the new resources made possible from the funding from our school, which is invested in career pathways. And with a certified nursing class, us students get a professional training in high school while learning everything we need to become certified nursing assistants and have the resources, transportations, and even earn and get a Minnesota state exam, which is covered to get our Minnesota certified nursing assistant certification. At St. Louis Park High School, the CNA class was able to get around 8 actual live and operational hospital beds and supplies and tools and CNA books, resources, mannequins, and much more. Seeing the first wave of students in certified nursing assistant class really inspired me to join the CNA class, which I would take my senior year of high school, and the journey of Korean pathways. Senior year came, and let me tell you, the semester of CNA went like a blink of an eye, and I gained valuable skills and lessons in preparation for a job in a clinical setting, but most importantly, I was able to receive my CNA certification by passing the state exam last month, all while being in high school. CNA has been a valuable part of my education, practicing on mannequins, and our friends practicing skills for the CNA tests and unit tests. You know how we all feel about tests, but we still had to do them. Learning new terminology and having registered nurses come into our classroom and test our skills has really prepared me for the pathway of college and have a chance of new doors for me, such as new jobs, and most important, have the resources of career and pathways. And the Korean pathway models
have demonstrated and eliminated barriers and disparities for us as students, covering such as the exam, financial burden, transportation, and time, and while us being at school. Because of this model, I was able to be in a CNA class with a huge wave of Black, Indigenous, and students of color, multilingual students from all different backgrounds. And don't forget, us as the youth and students are the future healthcare providers of Minnesota, and we will be a new generation of healthcare workers from a diverse cultures, backgrounds, and multilingual individuals. And I was able to grow the courage to speak up healthcare workers and medical executives on the topics such as racial disparities present in healthcare. That way they have that subconscious idea on their mind, and my own personal experiences in the healthcare, such as from when I first learned English in kindergarten, translating paperwork from my parents, documents, government paperwork, and assisting in financial aid and bills. And currently I am in a course which is also offered by the Career and Pathways called Adulting and Wellness. It is part of the Health and Sciences Career Pathways, where we learn valuable adult skills proposed by us students, such as learning about health insurance, mental health, taxes, and even a unit that we suggested on self-defense. If there is something I want you to take away from this, is that we have funding, resources, and a career of pathway model for high schools all across the state of Minnesota. It will help create the future leaders of Minnesota. High school is a time where we grow intellectually, prosper, and explore different interests, push curiosity onto students, and this is what I was able to gain and accomplish through my fellow classmates. By the time I want to attend a post-secondary education, we have a sense of what we want to do, and we do not have to stress in changing our majors or having to worry about money when we go to college. Lastly, I want to talk about how career has shaped who I want to be in life. I am a Mexican student. I am a first-generation student who is about to attend to college. I am a student of color, and I come from different backgrounds, and this has helped me prosper in new ways I have not imagined, putting my dreams ahead while maintaining my 4.0 all 4 years with IB and AP honors classes. And because of this, I was able to get the help of counselors who were able to sit with me to attend and enroll in Yale's Young Global Scholars Program at Northwestern Healthcare Medicine. And this is because I believe this bill would help students like me who face like different disparities have the chance to find an interest in school. And I thank you guys so much. And I want to give a shout out to my teachers at my school, Ms. Merkel, Ms. Mueller, and everybody else who has helped me become who I am. And my teacher, Ms. Flusky, who teaches the CNA class. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. I hope your teachers are watching. I'm pretty sure they're very proud of you.
Yes.
Discussion. Representative Centimura.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Norris. Thank you to the testifier for your amazing testimony. I really felt like I was on the journey of high school with you, and it was a pleasure to get to kind of watch you grow through that. It sounds like you are having the high school experience that we want students across Minnesota to have, right, where you have real-world experience, where you're getting to try on different things, different careers, and it sounds like you're leaving high school with a really kind of like solid plan of what you want to do down to the specific field of medicine that you want to go into, which is pretty amazing. I don't think I had that kind of, you know, precision of what I wanted to do when I was leaving high school. I also just appreciate the kind of context that you gave around some of the courses that you've been able to take at your school, ethnic studies, that have been able to, you know, help you enter the medical field while also really kind of understanding some of the structural things that are going on within medicine that have traditionally disempowered or disenfranchised communities of color. I think that we need doctors with that kind of lens going into the field, and so thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Representative Bean.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. Thank you, Representative Norris. And thank you, Mr. Martinez Herrera. I echo everything my colleague has said. What I'm most impressed with what you said, was that you went through the CNA program. You have a vision of where you want to go, what you want to be. You're in high school. I mean, this is just absolutely amazing. We need to have more of this. and I hope my kids will come and watch your testimony here and get an idea. It's like 4-0 every year in high school. That's amazing, and it's not easy, and I applaud you for coming here and testifying, because I know it's not an easy thing to speak in front of a group, but you're very poised. Thank you very much. I yield my time back to you, Mr. Chair.
Any discussion? All right, Representative Norris, closing statement.
Thanks, Chair Zhang. I don't know that there's much more that I need to say. I think we've seen, you know, firsthand an amazing story that was produced by this program, and hopefully with additional funding from this committee, we can have even more stories like Mr. Martinez Herrera in the future.
Thank you, Kevin, and Representative Norris. I will renew my motion that House File 2258, as amended, be laid over for inclusion. Next is House File 1310, another Representative Norris bill. Youth bill. I will move that House File 1310 be laid over for possible inclusion. Do you have an amendment? No, you don't. Great. Here you go, Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. I describe this bill, House File 1310, and the Youth Build program that it funds as a triple win. It introduces young people to the trades. It addresses our affordability or our affordable housing crisis while also promoting home ownership. This bill would expand a proven program that has sites currently in central Minnesota, counties like Pine, Kennebec, and Kandy Ohi counties, Detroit Lakes, Duluth, Grand Rapids, Minneapolis, Rochester, St. Cloud, St. Paul, and the Southwest Metro. So you can see we've really got statewide impact with this program. And it comes with four major benefits. First, it helps young people ages 16 to 24 who've not been successful in traditional programs or who sometimes need something other than a traditional school program, and teaches them construction skills and other readily marketable skills. It creates, at a very reasonable cost, permanent housing for low-income families and families that are experiencing homelessness. It helps to prepare young people for jobs in important fields that are facing some serious workforce shortages right now. And it helps to reduce that home ownership gap. The Department of Employment and Economic Development research indicates that there's more than $3 returned for every dollar spent by the state on the Youth Build program. So we're asking that the current appropriation be increased from $1 million per year to $2.5 million. This will allow more students to be trained and more housing to be constructed for people experiencing homelessness. And with that, Chair Brand, I've got a testifier to talk more about the program.
Yeah, Ms. Representative North, to your testifier. Please state your name for the tape and then continue with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Khalik Rogers of Good Riddance Consulting. Thank you, Chair and Committee. I'd just like to mention that a lot of the programs that actually people, the testifiers and things of that nature, I was a part of those programs growing up, but I wasn't born here in Minnesota. I was a Chicago native, and my parents took a leap of faith moving here to Minnesota because they heard that there were many opportunities and for housing, for workforce, and things of that nature. But when we came here, we had realized that although there were slightly greater opportunities, there was a vast amount of people in black and brown communities coming for them. And so through that process of us trying to find housing, we were not able to do so as quickly as we thought we could, and ended up having to go into homelessness. And a lot of the spaces here in the state only took single-parent homes. And since my father was also in the picture, that ended up splitting our family. And from that experience, I never forgot that moment. And as I was going through life growing up as a youth in St. Paul, I knew that for me, in order for me to really see my vision and my dream come true, I had to go work hard to find resources in order to do so. That led me to many of the programs, such as the YWCA Impact Program, which taught workforce development. I was also a part of Genesis Works, which gave IT internships to youth, and also worked with Youth Prize, where I helped generate awareness for youth and family homelessness. And through those experiences, I myself was able to go through those programs and pretty much be a pioneer for people that look like me. Because when I went through those programs, there often weren't black males and or black or brown people as a whole utilizing those programs. And for me, rather than those places making some of those programs making accommodations, for me, I found Mostof making accommodations to make those people feel welcome in those spaces. And for me, that led me to what I'm doing now, becoming a change maker, to make sure that those people that do look like me in those workforce spaces actually feel welcome and have opportunities. For that reason, now I'm just got nominated and accepted to the Harvard Business School's Minnesota Young American Leaders Program, where I can then now advocate for, on a national scale, the needs of our community, and even more so, the need to diversify what type of opportunities are pushed in at an earlier intersection to our youth. And Youth Build, to me, is an amazing program that can do that. Youth Build has and will continue to change the narrative for low black income communities by creating a pathway for them to be self-sufficient. You know, taking them from being victims in order and then changing that to being the protagonists of their stories, where they can change the narrative within one generation by learning trades, learning a different pathway that isn't, may not always be college for everyone, but giving them more opportunities, really a broadened vision of opportunities for themselves. And I'd just like to just read briefly just a testify, one of the testifiers who couldn't be here today, a person who actually graduated from the Youth Build program. His name is Ong Mei Wei. And he, so he was born in Myanmar, which is his country, where it was ravaged by war in 1948. Now, when he was five, he had to flee his village because they were, the Burmese army came and burned it down. He was forced to move to Thailand and live in a refugee camp. His life was hard in the refugee camp. He had lived in a box that was hardly bigger than a doghouse. They barely had food, and when they ate the last of the very grains of rice that they had, insects and whatever animals that they could find. He lived in the refugee camp for about 15 years, and those were the hardest years of his life. They had to go to school in refugee camp, but their education was poor. And when he was 19, he had the opportunity to move to America. And it was a bittersweet moment because he had to leave everything he knew and his family behind except for his two twin sisters. When he had came to America, he could barely speak English. He had lots of problems and he even had difficulty shopping. The worst part was transportation and finding a job. America was very difficult to survive without good English skills and having no job experience. After about 2 years, he had heard about the Youth Build program. And the Youth Build program would help him learn how to build houses and learn leadership. Youth Build had produced a lot of good workers for unions and trades and other occupations. And as an immigrant, Youth Build program had been a very important part of his life. Youth Build had changed his life so much that since he has joined, today at this point he makes $40 an hour as a journeyman in the union. And right now he plans to own his own home, and he owes all his successes to the Youth Build program, and he hopes that you will support them with increased funding to help make other people's story be just like that. And also, just for statistic reason, Youth Build is a triple win, right, just as Matt has said. But if you invest into Youth Build, it's a 3-to-1 match. So as you're investing into this program, the money that goes into it, you get a direct return. And also, just for a little more statistics, so you might ask how many more homes for very low income and people experiencing homeless will be built, just as much as job opportunities. If we increase these funds by $1.5 million, it will more than double the homes that they have already built, which has been 35 homes. And currently they serve about 500 students, and it'll double those numbers as well. So just want to say thank you for the opportunity, and I hope we can do something to continue to build a better future for our youth.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Rogers. I appreciate that. Are there any other folks in the audience who wish to testify? Okay. Representative Norris, why don't you close it up?
Thank you, Chair Brand. And I've known Mr. Rogers for a number of years, and every time I see him, I learn about some new impressive thing he's doing. I didn't know about the Harvard thing until today, so congratulations on that. And I think Mr. Rogers just demonstrates, you know, what's possible when we invest in our young people. And this is a program that not only invests in our young people and gets them into careers where we desperately need workers, but it also produces affordable housing in the process. So, again, it seems to me like a no-brainer. And would encourage the committee to invest in increasing its investment in this program this year.
Okay. Well, I renew my motion that House File 1310 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and the bill is now laid over. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Brand.
Next up, we have House File 2526. Chair Hassan, back to the testifiers. Chair Hassan, would you like to make the motion on your bill?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's my motion.
The motion is to lay over.
For possible inclusion, Mr. Chair.
All right. Continue with your opening.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We all know the importance of having a father in your life. I always, you know, I've talked about, you know, having a positive real model, and it doesn't get more real than having a father involved in your life. Too many children are growing up without the financial and emotional support of positive involved father, and kids raised in household without a father are 5 times more likely to experience poverty than kids who grew up with two-parent household. The Father Project of Goodwill Easter Seals is a national model here in Minnesota with quality partners in Rochester, St. Cloud, Minneapolis, and St. Paul, who together have created a place where dads can get job training and parenting skills they need in order to become essential part of raising a healthy, happy, and secure children. Increases in wage, child support payment, and parenting skills are just some of the program's economic impact on families and communities. And we cannot, there is the quantity of that, but then there is the quality, which we can't put a number on it, because quality of having a stable relationship with your father and having, you know, your father show up for sports and plays and school, and just to have somebody that you can pick up the phone and call. Yes, life happens, people get divorced, but with programs like this, we put children in the center, and we made this about children. So supporting fathers that need the help that they can get so they can stay in their children's lives. House File 2526 builds on this established and successful model on supporting dads and their kids across the state of Minnesota. Here today, I have somebody who's going to testify from the Father's Project, Guy Bowling. He can do a better job than I can, so I'll let him have the time. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Chair Hassan. To the testifiers, Mr. Bowling, please state your name and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Guy Bowling. I am the I have some big shoes to fill, Representative Hassan, but thank you. I'm the Senior Workforce Development Manager for the Father Project, a program of Goodwill Easter Seals, Minnesota. Thank you to Representative Hassan and members of this committee for the opportunity to speak about this impactful program that equips fathers with the skills needed to help their children, their family, and our communities thrive. Goodwill Easter Seals Minnesota provides custom my programs to eliminate barriers to work and independence. Our Father Project has served dads for almost 25 years through a powerful combination of economic stability, work supports, parenting support, and legal justice support. Our proven model has been shared with partners in other parts of the state, including Family Service Rochester, who's here with me today, in Olmsted County, Goodwill Easter Seals in St. Cloud, and partners in other locations. The program is strong in position to grow to meet the needs of even more dads in the coming years. Many non-custodial fathers want to be involved in the lives of their children, but need to develop the tools to connect with the support system to be successful. The program largely serves men of color who are low-income, non-custodial fathers, Many are unemployed or underemployed and face multiple barriers. Our goal is to help dads get jobs, train for better jobs, move into careers as they become positive, productive workers and parents. Recent years has been challenging for all of us, including the Father Project. In addition to the effects of COVID-19 pandemic, we're also greatly impacted by the civil unrest of 2020 and the events surrounding and following George Floyd. As we shared in previous testimony, we lost our physical location and it was destroyed during the unrest in South Minneapolis on Lake Street, and also furloughed staff due to effects of the pandemic and overall lack of funding. It was truly a challenging period for our program, our staff, our dads, and the families that we serve. Ultimately, our program, although, has emerged even stronger and even better positioned to support the dads who are striving to support their kids. We have fully returned to in-person services. The Father Project has established a new location in Sabathany Community Center in South Minneapolis and have also established services in St. Paul. The needs continue to be great. Over the past 12 months, we have enrolled more than 275 dads in our program. Of these, many are experiencing issues related to reentering society after incarceration. We serve a diverse mix of individuals across the state, and our outcomes are very strong. In 2022, 75 dads were placed in employment. About 75% of the dads we serve completed our 12-week parenting curriculum. Many have increased contact with their children. A state appropriation would allow us to serve hundreds more fathers and help them stabilize employment and be there for their children. Thank you for this opportunity to highlight the importance of supporting fathers across Minnesota. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have, but first let me introduce one of our community partners in this important work, my fellow testifier, Mr. Ben Warner. Thank you
very much. I appreciate the testimony, Mr. Bowling. Next up is Benjamin Warner. Please state your name and then continue with your testimony.
My name is Ben Warner. Good afternoon, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ben Warner, and I have the great honor and privilege of being a career specialist for the Father Project with Family Service Rochester. I'm also an alumnus of this amazing program. Our organization has served dads in the greater Rochester area for over 10 years. In 2022, our program in Rochester served 65 dads, and at any given time, we're serving around 30 dads in our community. The majority of these men have struggled with maintaining employment and facing barriers such as chemical health, legal troubles, child support arrears, broken relationships, lack of solid work history, and the list goes on. Even prior to entering our program, we work with dads right away to start to examine these barriers to see how we could help navigate them back to being a great dad and a productive member of society. Our community has rallied around the Father Project. We have been very fortunate to have so many great partners who want to be part of the solution and see our dads succeed. There are numerous employers who we work with daily that are willing to give our guys a chance, knowing that they may have some barriers that they may not otherwise normally allow. We work closely with child support to help our dads get back on track and out of arrears. If the Father Project didn't exist, I may not be here today. I may not have custody of my boys. I may not be a homeowner. I might not even be a taxpayer. There's a good chance that I may still be stumbling down a dark path. Chances are I'd be a burden on society instead of a positive leader that I am today. This program isn't just some program. For many, it's the turning point. Involvement in the Father Project can be transformational for many who come into our program broken and hopeless. The vast majority leave with a job or a career, furthering their education, a driver's license, a GED, paying their child support on time, paying off debt, paying off fines, being law-abiding, and mending damaged relationships with loved ones. Their children are the ones who ultimately benefit. All of these positive choices that these dads are making wouldn't be possible without the Father Project, where they learn skills like these. With continued and increased funding, we hope to not only continue serving dads, but to serve even more dads so that the children in our community will thrive. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next on the list, we have George Weir.
Hi there.
Please state your name and continue with your testimony.
Chairman, members, my name is George Rerat, and
thanks for hearing from me today. My son George was actually here earlier testifying on Representative Edelson's robotics bill, so it was fun to be here with him. I'm a divorced dad of three, and I'm a co-founder and director of the Minnesota Shared Parenting Action Group. We help support parents, both fathers and mothers, who wish to be part of their children's life. Many times because of the judicial system, the family law system, they aren't able to do that. So we support equality in family court, a rebuttable presumption of equal shared parenting, and we try to support parents going through the family law process. Through this, we run into a lot of clients of the Father Project, and we've worked with six of their clients and helped them. Not only one has gotten to equal custody, the rest have gotten, you know, every other weekend or at least some time with their children. But we've seen the good work that they do, and it's incredible work. There is a bigger demand for their services than they can help. We've had people try to contact, and because of their lack of funding before the pandemic, it's very difficult for a father to get help. Representative Fazan asked me to maybe focus a little bit because they've done a wonderful job talking about the good work they do. But I will tell you that children who have their father in their life less than one-third of the time are so much more likely to fail to graduate from high school. They are much more likely to have negative contact with law enforcement. They are much more likely to suffer from alcohol, drug, and mental health issues. They are much more likely to be incarcerated. They are much more likely to end up having children out of wedlock themselves. 40% of marriages today end in divorce. Approximately half of the children in Minnesota that are born today are born out of wedlock. So there's a tremendous amount of children that need help. By supporting the work of the Fathers Project and by supporting fathers, you're supporting those children. And I listened to the testimony of Mr. Rogers on the previous bill, 1310. He was talking about how when his family was here, they ran into homelessness, and they couldn't find a place to put their family up without saying goodbye to their father, who was part of their life. It's the fathers in our state of Minnesota have a very difficult time being part of their family. There are so many impediments to it. And then try to be a father and leave a domestic abuse situation with your children. It's much like if you try to get housing. You can't, most places will not take a father and their children when the father's being abused, even though a father is just as likely as a mother to face domestic abuse. So I really support the work that they do, and I hope that they get the funding they want.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anybody else that wishes to testify on this? Yeah, we'll go to member discussion. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hahn, thank you for this bill. This week I was going through my mail, and there was one that looked very familiar. It was a child's handwriting, and it was my son wrote me a letter. He's 7 years old, and he misses me because I've been in St. Paul a lot. And, you know, it's... You know, I go home on the weekends, and we're there together as a family. And, you know, but at the same time, I'm not there every night. You know, and because of phones and being able to have a video, I've been able to help them through their homework some and, you know, and do that. And, you know, and that's, you know, something that, sorry, you know, as a father, you know, we want to be part of our lives. And, you know, it's important for the children, but it's also... You know, as a couple of the other testifiers have said, it's important for the fathers as well. It's stability in their lives, it's something to work forward. And Mr. Rerat, you know, brought up some important points on shared parenting and kind of the inequalities that exist in that. And I think we do need to take some look at that. I mean, that's not what this bill is about. But, you know, thank you for this and just highlighting the important needs of, you know, parents and especially fathers in the lives of children. So. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Representative Nelson. Anybody else that wants to have a discussion? Seeing none. Chair Hassan, why don't you bring it home?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you, Rep. Nelson, for those comments. Every child deserves a loving and stable relationship with their father, and this program just does that. Lack of access to opportunity should not be the reason why children are don't have fathers in their life. This is a good bill. I hope we can include it in our omnibus bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair Hassan. I will renew my motion to have House File 2526 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And the bill is now laid over. Thank you very much. Next on the list, we have Representative Spencer Mira, House File 2127. And Representative, would you like to make your motion on the bill?
Yes. I would like to move that House File 2127 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay, it looks like we have an amendment as well. Would you like to discuss your amendment?
Yes. The A1 amendment gets the bill in the shape that I would like it. It clarifies some language about the appropriation that was just a little bit unclear. It makes clear that the appropriation is asking for $5 million in fiscal year 24 and $5 million in fiscal year 25. This is in addition to the base funding of $4,050,000 in 24 and $4,050,000 in 25.
All right. Discussion on the amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those against? Motion passes and we have amended the bill. To your statements.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Brand and members of the committee. I've been before the committee a lot this week talking about youth employment in my city and my district. I'm excited to now talk to you about a program for youth employment across the state. This is actually a program that I got to be a participant of when I was in high school through the Step Up program, which is the City of Minneapolis's Minnesota Youth Program kind of partner. When I was in high school, I did the Step Up program, which consisted of classes for high school students to kind of support you in learning some job skills, everything from how to build a resume to one that has always stuck with me, which was just the importance of flossing before a job interview. And then placing young people in lots of different professional experiences all throughout the city of Minneapolis. I had friends that were working in politics at the mayor's office. I had friends that were working for the Chamber of Commerce. I got put in a position working for U.S. Bank. It was my first, you know, kind of outside of working at a coffee shop or babysitting, kind of real professional experience. I think, you know, I learned there that I did not want to work in corporate America. But I think, you know, often our first jobs are to help us learn as much what we want to do as what we don't want to do. And so I am now happy to be presenting this bill, which would secure both the ongoing funding for this program and then also seeking some additional funding to serve more youth around our state at this really critical time. We know that our youth have been through a lot over the last few years. We know that our youth are really hurting coming out of the pandemic, and we know that there's a lot of catch-up that our youth need to do, and so I think that these employment opportunities are a great way to do that. So the Minnesota Youth Program is the only youth employment program that serves youth from all 87 counties throughout our state. And the funds are allocated through a statutory county-based formula based on need. This program provides paid work experience and related support services to underrepresented, low-income youth, those youth who are more likely to face challenges entering the labor market and who were hit hardest during the pandemic. In coordination with local high school counselors, the Minnesota Youth Project provides effective career counseling and labor market information and exposure to high growth in demand occupations and industries. Youth receive assistance in identifying a career of interest and planning a post-secondary path to prepare for that career. For each state dollar invested in the Minnesota Youth Program, the state received a return on investment of $9.29 in fiscal year 22. This return comes in the form of participants who returned to school, were placed in jobs, and paid government taxes, and reduced public assistance payments for those placed in jobs. In fiscal year 22, 3,278 youth were served through the work experience component. An additional 19,000 youth were served through the outreach to schools, the career advisor component, totaling about 25,000 throughout students throughout our state who benefited from this program. And now I would like to turn it over to my testifiers who can talk a little bit more about this impactful program across our state in all of the counties that are represented by members of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you. To your testifier, please state the name and also continue with your testimony. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Ling Becker. I'm the Workforce Director for Ramsey County. I'm also the Executive Director of the Workforce Innovation Board of Ramsey County, which is one of the 16 workforce development boards in the state of Minnesota. These boards consist of at least 51% business members and also include many of the other core workforce partners, including adult basic ed, community colleges, labor, and vocational rehab. And why that's important is that throughout today and probably throughout many of your days as you've been hearing different testimonials and projects, there's a need for alignment and coordination and some intentionality, and it's at the boards that a lot of that ends up happening. So in addition, we also have youth committees as a part of a subset of all those boards, and on many of those boards, youth have voices as well in some of the programming. So why is this funding necessary? So Minnesota's federal youth employment funds have been declining over the last 10 years. Federal youth funds are allocated to states based on actually a 43-year-old federal allocation model that actually is based on the adult employment rate. So as you know, Minnesota's experiencing historical lows when it comes to adult employment. It doesn't necessarily mean that we don't have significant needs when it comes to specifically our young people, and the demographics are changing in our state, but also in our diverse populations who might have dropped out of the labor force, and sometimes that's not calculated as a part of that employment rate calculation. So there are significant needs. So what is the impact of one-time additional funding? I know that's sometimes a concern, and I just want to say that this is both a time of great intervention and great opportunity. As Representative Sensenmura said, you know, this is there's been so much school disruption in Ramsey County. Our intentional focus around our American Rescue Plan dollars have been critically on our 18 to 30-year-olds, honestly, because for a lot of that group, they've been, like, they were the folks that were, like, either, you know, locked out of school, locked out of college or high school, right, during that time, where you are doing that career exploration, where you are meeting mentors and teachers. And it is such a critical time that an infusion of intervention is actually much needed. An additional 25,000 young people will be served by this increase annually. And in addition, I think this is a unique and opportune time for us to engage with employers in a more meaningful way. We are trying to strengthen our employer networks, and I know, as Representative said here, she gave a vast array of, like, business partners, but we need more. We need more business partners, and the way we do that is to start that engagement through creating a public-private partnership of how, you know, employers have a role in helping to build a workforce for tomorrow, and what do they bring to the table. And so things that we're doing in Ramsey County is, like, ensuring that those that get funding from us through programs like this are going through mandatory supervisory training that's been youth designed, so that we're trying not only to invest in the young people, provide work experiences, but trying to change the cultures of workplaces in our community. All those things have to happen. And so that kind of carrot of a program like this sort of draws employers in to sort of contribute to the community in a way that we have can form new public-private partnerships. And so, you know, this program is really critical because it's really serving that underrepresented population in the workforce. 60% are youth of color, 46% have reported disabilities, and 62% are youth who are receiving public assistance. And that tie into the counties is so critical because we do have the systems involved, young people that are in our systems. And so for many low-income young people, this program is really the first opportunity for a first-time job. Early employment opportunities are just so important for personal growth, confidence, being able to move forward. And so, but it's also important that they get some immediate wages. We learned throughout the pandemic, many young people were supporting their families and helping to contribute to the household income. But they also need to be structured and also well-supported in positive work environments. And so that is why it's so important that we play a role in ensuring that young people have that positive first work experience. So, and I think a lot of people have talked about, you know, a variety of reasons why youth employment is so important, also to just create those, as you know, Mr. Senna had said, those universal job skills, right? Those, that's really core for all of these programs. I just do want to say that, you know, low-income youth often lack that social capital. That is the biggest thing our barrier youth lack, is that they don't have a whole network of friends and family that can open a door and tell you, or even tell you about a job, because those are jobs that in their families, because of the circumstances they find themselves in or the newness of their you know, immigration status, they don't have that network. They don't have the exposure. And also, the future of work, many of those jobs that young people need to do, we don't even know about them yet. And so having this ability to do career exploration is so important. And I think it's true, most people have now realized that you don't need a four-year degree to necessarily have a family-sustaining and fulfilling job. But then how do young people make that next decision, whether it's to join a union, whether it's to do a two-year vocational training, whether it's to go into work right away? I mean, to understand the career pathways of things, like, how are you supposed to know how to do that now that we know the four-year degree isn't the answer? The rest of those paths are actually fairly complicated, and you do need some help and support to navigate. So I do think that's really important. And then, you know, lastly, I just want to mention that MYP adds more capacity to a program that works. This program's evidence-based. It's a model that has proven outcomes on employment, earnings, education. We have great partnerships with our funders who pass the money through to us at DEED to provide us kind of that support and the work that we do together. But certainly we've seen that we've reduced rates of arrest, incarceration. It's evidence-based that there are things about MYP that works. And I think specifically, I just want to give you the example in Ramsey County, and this would be true in the city of Minneapolis too. You know, we work closely in our county in partnership with the city of St. Paul, and we have a joint workforce board. But the thing I want to mention is we leverage our funding based on, like, the plethora of funding sources. And so under one umbrella, we have something called YouthWorks. It encompasses our own levy funding from our own communities, sometimes CDBG, our Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act federal funding, also other competitive funding, and most recently the American Rescue Plan Act funding. And so we're trying to braid all that. But working with young people who are systems involved, those who have age out of foster care, maybe experiencing homelessness, who have been justice impacted, requires significant resources. So by looking at that myriad of funding streams, I can tell you that through my experience, by having more MYP in the community, we can ensure that we are able to deeply and appropriately and intentionally invest along the whole continuum. There's a lot of young people in different spots along that whole continuum. Those funding streams don't have to all go to the same groups of young people, if that makes sense. And so being really strategic about how we align that to make sure that we don't leave anyone out of that continuum is really, really critical. So, and then lastly, I'll just say within our county, and I think there's a mix of how it's done statewide, but I know in the primarily in the metro, certainly, our workforce boards contract those funds out, and they are supporting our community partners. So I just wanted to publicly thank our MYP Ramsey County partners. They include 30,000 Feet, Hmong American Partnership, Hired, Tree Trust, Urban Boat Builders, Restoration for All, and Youth Prize. So I do have a young woman here from the School of Excellence, Community School of Excellence, who would like to say a few words too, if that's okay.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Yeah, please come up to the testifier stand. State your name and then...
Hello, my name is Nari Tao. I am currently attending the Community School of Excellence High School. From what I know, our school has been partners with HAF for a while now, and so that's how I was able to, like, take up the opportunities that was given by HAF. The past two summers, I was able to be in two paid internships with HAP, and I kind of want to talk about that. The first summer, I was put into a little fifth grade classroom with around 15 students. And I want to say that being in that classroom was like a phenomenal experience, because, you know, like, thinking back, I used to be a little fifth grader, but now I'm like, what, a senior? And so I was like, wow, this is like a totally different experience. Like, I'm seeing everything from, like, the teacher's point of view. I'm seeing, like, the whole classroom. I see the little shy kid in a corner. I see the kid who talks a lot. I see the little class clown. And it was just phenomenal. And I recall a student who was struggling with his math. He was struggling with adding his decimals, and I could tell he was struggling because he was, like, looking over his shoulder to his peer, and he wasn't, like, trying to raise his hand to ask for help. And so I was like, I remember doing that. So I went over to him and helped him with his simple addition with his letter decimals, and we got through it. He was happy. He was like, thank you, Miss Nari. And I was like, you're welcome. And then the second summer I had in the internship, I was put into the enrichment and supply team. And this was like a whole new experience for me because the first week I had with this team, the experience was not what I expected. We were super unorganized, and the way that the team was running, it was just not it. And so we had to sit down with each other, and we were like, okay, we need to figure out how we are going to run this team, because our team, as I said, is the enrichment and supply team. So during summer school, the teachers are going to request supplies. So we're responsible for delivering those supplies to them and making sure that we deliver what they need for the classroom and for their activity. So it was super unorganized. And then we had to sit down, had to talk. And then after a while, it was perfect. The way that the team was running was perfect. And so these were like a few soft skills that I learned from it: critical thinking and problem solving. It was big struggling time, but I'm glad that we got through it. And I'm proud that like we finally solved our unorganized team. And I also want to mention that my manager at the time, his name is Race, he helped me through the process of getting my W-2, all the tax forms done, because of course we have to like fill out tax forms for like, it's a process of growing up. And I asked my parents for help, but their English is not good, and there were times when like I was the one who had to translate for them when taking them to the hospital, when like they get bills, I have to call like AT&T and like ask them and like translate everything. So my manager Race was really helpful in like helping me with all of the W-2s, so I am grateful to him. And the interview process, I was also very grateful because he was there giving me feedbacks, and it was just, I'm grateful to him, technically. And I also got the chance to take a CNA class at St. Paul College, and it was a really fun experience because in the labs, there were like these mannequins on the beds, and then we got to practice like putting clothes on them. We got to practice like washing them. We got to practice bedpans with each other, which was really fun. And I want to mention that I do come from a low-income family, and the whole class was covered by HAP, and my college friends, they were all saying how lucky I am because they were complaining about like having to pay for the lab equipment that they were using, while I, on the other hand, was like, I'm technically not paying for anything, so I'm grateful for HAP. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your experiences and your testimony. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify? Okay. Member discussion. Any member of the committee that likes to mention something? Okay. If not, seeing no discussions, Representative Sincero-Mera, bring it home.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Brand, committee members. I think, you know, I'll just end by saying I think there's never been a better time to invest in our young people. I really appreciated the word intervention. I think that that is what is needed. You know, I'll also say I shared the perspective of a young person in one of these programs, but I've also been on the other side. I've been an employer who had a step-up summer intern through the city of Minneapolis, and I really appreciated the piece about how the programs work with employers to make sure that they are set up to support students in being successful while accomplishing the work of their business or organization. You know, the skills that it takes to manage a high school student are not skills that I necessarily knew, and so I really appreciated some of the trainings that I got, some of the kind of problem solving I got when, you know, the high school student I was working with was having any kind of issues or anything like that. And, you know, I also was really pleased with the skills that this young person brought to our organization. You know, I think when we think about the skills that our young people can bring, social media skills, skills that oftentimes we don't have, you know, I think about our colleague here at the House, Larry Kraft, who's gone kind of viral on TikTok based on support from some younger team members of his, you know, his campaign and his team. I think young people have a lot to offer, and we need to be welcoming them into the workplace, and I appreciate a program that can help us do that. Thank you, and I hope members will consider this for possible inclusion in the omnibus.
All right, I will renew my motion that S-21-27 be laid over as amended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and the bill is now laid over. Thank you very much. Next, Representative Senator Mura, House File 1697. And would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I would like to move House File 1697 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay, and please introduce your bill.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Brand, members of the committee. I'm happy to be here talking about House File 1697. This bill talks about how we can ensure that people in our community who face mental health barriers can stay, can come to our workforce and stay within our workforce. You know, this is a very personal issue to me as someone who has loved ones and family members who struggle with mental health. I know how hard it can be for them to hold down jobs. I also know the amazing skills that they can bring to a work environment. And so I think this is a really critical issue that folks around our state have been really thinking about for a long time, about how do we address some of the barriers, how do we support employers in ensuring that these folks can stay in the workforce. So this bill is kind of a culmination of some of that work. It was put together by the Mental Health Legislative Network, a coalition of over 40 mental health organizations, including professionals, providers, and advocates. This bill is based on work that shows that about 60% of people with a serious mental illness want to work, but only about 15% are currently employed. Serious mental illnesses can include bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, PTSD, and major depression, just to name a few. For people with these illnesses, having employment is often a significant point of stability and helps people experience recovery. Individual placement and support, known as IPS, is an evidence-based practice of proven outcomes and has been shown to be more effective than usual vocationals, especially for people of color and indigenous individuals. IPS integrates mental health services with vocational rehab services. It uses a zero exclusion eligibility, so people are not excluded based on diagnosis, symptoms, legal involvement, homelessness, or other factors. Services are very personalized and are not time limited. 40% of IPS participants become steady workers and remain competitively employed a decade later. There are 19 programs in Minnesota which were maintained by a one-time appropriation in 2019, but because of federal changes, none of that money was able to be used for expanding programs. Now Deed has reported that without a $1 million investment, some of these programs will be cut. This bill provides $2 million each year to the base to ensure that this service continues and expands. This funding is also included in the governor's budget. The other section of this bill is for people who may not have a serious mental illness, but still need mental health support while obtaining and maintaining employment. This bill creates a task force within Deed to work with stakeholders, identify barriers, and make recommendations to the legislature by next year. This bill is not only about building our workforce, it's about building wellness and support in our communities. And now I would like to turn it over to my testifiers who can share more. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative. The first testifier I have on the list is Samuel Ganji. If you could please state your name and then go ahead and continue with your testimony.
I think we're going to have some different testifiers, if they can just go ahead. Thank you.
Please state your name and continue with your testimony.
I will do that. My name is Robert Reedy, and thank you, Mr. Brandt, Chair Brandt, and members of the House Workforce Development, Finance, and Policy Committee. Thank you for hearing us from us today. My name is Robert Reedy, and I'm the Senior Director of Vocational Services at RISE, where I've worked for the past 20 years. In that capacity, I oversee three individual placement and support programs in Hennepin County and Anoka County. Additionally, RISE operates two IPS projects in central Minnesota, serving nine counties. RISE also participates or participated in two Social Security research projects, testing the effectiveness of IPS services. I oversaw those efforts and worked directly with the research team. In our IPS projects, RISE has worked with over 2,000 Minnesotans in 18 years, and I can attest to the effectiveness of the model. IPS is an evidence-based practice in the area of employment for people who experience mental illness. IPS service have been shown over and over to be the most effective way to deliver vocational services for this population. Why is this important? Because work works. The Federal Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, SAMHSA, recognizes that employment is an essential part of recovery from mental illness. This is something that we see every day at RISE. And as you will hear from Daniel shortly, you will hear it from him. Without the funding in this legislation, current projects will be cut by 27%, including projects at RISE. At our organization, that means that we will serve 73% or 73 fewer individuals in the next year. In addition to preserving services, the increased funding in this bill would allow the program to serve 325 more Minnesotans with mental illness. The increased access to IPS services throughout Minnesota is a critical need. Currently, only half of the counties have any access to IPS services. RISE's IPS program is the only one in Hennepin County, the most populous and diverse county in the state. Obviously, the needs are much greater than we can meet today. This additional funding could allow an expansion to more geographic areas and extend services for individuals who are Black, Indigenous, and people of color. I can personally attest to the effectiveness of work in recovery. On April 15, 2021, my son died from fentanyl poisoning. This loss, as you can imagine, was devastating. My mental health was profoundly impacted, and work was a critical part of my recovery. Having a sense of purpose and a place to be amongst people that supported me were essential part of my path to healing. I was fortunate. I had a job. I had a support system in place. But there are many Minnesotans with mental illness that do not have that already, or do not have a job already, and rely on the support provided in this bill to access the benefits of employment. Work works. It has for me, for Daniel, and we need to make sure IPS services remain available to people across the state who need the services most. We need to make sure that Minnesotans who experience mental illness have the opportunity to work as part of their recovery. IPS programs make a difference, but we need to fund them. Please support the ongoing and additional funding for individual placement and supports in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And next testifier, please state your name and continue with your testimony.
Hello, committee. My name is Daniel Dooley. I suffer with mental health issues. I'm a client of RISE IPS, which is individual placement and support. I have been supported by RISE for the past 7 years. Since working with individual placement supports, I have been able to find different jobs to find the right fit. I now work at a place where I found a good balance of building my interpersonal work skills with people and also work hard to get my jobs done. I've gone from living in a boarding house with not much but shelter and some clothes that didn't work well for finding a job, to gaining good work clothes and employment that has helped me support my mental health. That employment has allowed me to purchase a car, live on my own, and work part-time. I'm beginning full-time work, and my goal is to transition off of benefits, becoming a high-functioning member of an independent and of society. RISE and individual placement and supports have played a big part in facilitating in the process of me becoming a productive member of society, which has had a profound effect on my mental health, quality of life, and well-being. All I ask from you today is that you continue to fund employment support services through individual placement supports so that people tomorrow have the same opportunities that I have had today to become an independent, fully productive member of society. Thank you so much for your time today. That is all.
Thank you very much for your testimony as well. Is there anybody else that would like to testify today? All right, we'll go to member questions. Any questions? Representative Baker. Lee Baker, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for bringing this bill forward. Mr. Reedy, again, yeah, sorry for this loss. What was the name of your son?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Brandt. Thank you for asking. My son's name was Jose Reedy.
So sorry again, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chair. And I know that takes a long time to heal, and doing this in working lots does help this process. And it mm-hmm. just so I do appreciate you being here on behalf of so many others that, you know, the work is so critical to our just kind of moving on and getting through this this period. To the author of the bill, I think I really like the bill. I want to support, and I will support this, and I like the task force that you're looking to create here too. One of the ideas or one of the thoughts I just want to share with you is my work on this ORAC community that you've heard about, and it was, again, we've thought about this a lot, is the importance of getting the right people on this task force. When I look at your makeup, I know it's still kind of in the works. I really want to make sure you actually get a maybe some employers on the list too, because I've mentioned in this committee many times, employers don't always get it. We don't always understand the needs of this community that needs a little extra. And we need to make sure that if we could be sensitive to that. We've got, I mean, I think if you reach out to the Minnesota retailers, they will have a member that is really tuned into this. And they, maybe it's Hospitality Minnesota, or it could be the National Federation of Independent Businesses, something small. If you had a couple of small employers that would be there at the table, that could really help us help develop a program with DEED when they get that set up. So I just wanted to mention, I think this is a good idea. But again, there's not always, I want to make sure we think through the task force as well enough. So appreciate it. Again, thank you, Mr. Reedy, and all the great testimony today. So thank you so much.
Mr. Reedy, would you like to respond? Okay, we're good. All right. Any other members who would like to have a question or anything like that or statement? Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Lead Baker. I think that's a great idea. You know, I think part of the work we need to do is supporting people with mental illnesses of how to adapt to workplace culture, but we also need to think about how can we help workplace culture adapt to really embrace people with mental health challenges and the gifts that they can bring to our workforce. You know, I think we talk about with so many sectors, whether it's the clean energy sector, whether it's the care sector, we need everyone, right? We need everyone. We need all of the workers that we can get. We can't afford to keep people out, and we know that our current work systems are not embracing people who have mental health challenges. Oftentimes, they're exacerbating the mental health challenges that people do bring to the work. And as we heard from the testifier, work works, right? Work can be part of people's recovery if we have the right supports in place. So I hope that the committee can include this for future consideration in the omnibus, and thank you so much for the testifiers for being here today and sharing your story. I really appreciate it. Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you.
I will renew the motion to lay over House File 1697 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And with that, the bill is laid over. Well, the next bill we have is House File 1240. Lead Baker, you're up.
All right, Chef, go right here. Go ahead and right over here.
Representative Baker, or Lead Baker, would you like to make a motion on your bill?
I would, Mr. Chair. I'd love to make a motion to lay over House File 1240 for possible inclusion into the workforce bill. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move on then, if I could, just to wrap it up. I think this is our final bill of the day.
Yep. Okay.
And again, I am just really proud to sit here with a couple of folks that understand this program really, really well. I've been very involved with it. Most people know that I'm in the hospitality industry. I've had some restaurants. A chef to me is like a doctor. A chef to me, I know.
What we do, we do.
Hold on. Your turn is coming up. But I'm just saying, a chef in a kitchen has a great deal of respect. And I've owned restaurants, and when our kitchens were operating, we ran the what you see in the movies sometimes, when you call each other chef. And I know that we're not always doing that, and some restaurants are different than others, but we want to build that environment up. We want to make sure that everybody who's a who's in the kitchen as a dishwasher. We treat each other with tremendous respect, and that's what this program does. When I see this program and what it does for kids in high school, this is the smallest request I think we're seeing in this whole committee this year, Mr. Chair. $250,000 to stand up another number of schools that want to provide a culinary program with high school students, where some students in some schools, we still have a waiting list of people to get into it. What this does is it stands up a variety of grants. Again, it could be anywhere from $2,000-$3,000 to $5,000-$7,000, depending on the school need. But they're finding ways of getting money to schools to hire the teacher a little extra to do this, to use the schools, find the money for the extra supplies, purchase some culinary equipment, defray the cost of the classroom food. These kind of things really help get the school going, because once they're up and running, they typically can kind of keep it going themselves. Over 5,500 students today in Minnesota are a part of this program. Over 100 high schools are offering this across the state of Minnesota. Foundational skills that are taught in these classes include problem solving, teamwork, customer service, event planning, and leadership. There's a ton of leadership when you are in a kitchen, when you've got a lot of things happening at one time or the other. So just again, the ProStart is a program of the National, started from the National Restaurant Association, and an experiential two-year curriculum for culinary arts in the food service management. Through classroom study, mentored work experiences, and the statewide and national ProStart competitions, students receive focused, skills-based training that gives them an advantage when they want to enter the job market or pursue a post-secondary degree in culinary management. The Hospitality Tourism Management Program comes from the American Hotel Lodging Association, introduces high school students to the hospitality and tourism industry, which I truly am one of the biggest supporters and cheerleaders for. And again, the initial appropriation that we received in 2021 enabled Hospitality Minnesota Education Foundation to kick this ProStart program off. There's some exciting competitions. I'm going to stop because I've got some chefs sitting next to me, and I want to make sure that we allow them some time with us. So, too, and it is our last, but have at it. Chef, it's all yours, okay?
Chef,
I'll let you introduce yourself.
As our first testifier, please go ahead and state your name and your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, members. My name is John Vanhouse. I'm a chef, the current president of the American Culinary Federation Minneapolis Chefs Chapter, and I work for Core Food Service. For the past 5 years, I've served as the lead judge for the Minnesota State ProStart Invitational, a statewide competition for our culinary and management high school teams. Today, I'm delighted to have the opportunity to testify in support of House File 1240. ProStart students learn not just how to cook and prepare a great meal, but how to work with different classmates, be a good team player, and how to be creative and resourceful to solve real-world problems. Believe me, there are plenty of times that not everything goes as planned when you're cooking, especially in competition, so you must be able to think on your feet and work together to successfully produce a great-looking and great-tasting meal. In my role as lead judge, I've seen firsthand the passion these young people discover for cooking and the leadership that's demonstrated in a high-pressure competition. The high-level meals that are produced are simply amazing. On a more basic level, learning how to cook helps students live a healthier life. They also learn how to save money by utilizing basic ingredients instead of purchasing further processed foods like pre-cut chicken. ProStart also teaches students how to develop a concept for a restaurant or other food service business, from designing the facilities, developing the menu, devising a marketing plan, and very importantly, managing the finances to be profitable. I was told in culinary school that you don't get fired because you don't know how to cook. You get fired because you can't make the boss money. The skills our ProStart students are learning are foundational and lifelong, with job readiness skills that can take them immediately into the workplace or to pursue post-secondary education. These students are the future for the hospitality industry, and seeing what they accomplish in high school gives me great pride in knowing they can excel in a wide variety of good-paying jobs. I want to thank Representative Baker for authoring this bill, and I ask for your support of House File 1240 to continue to engage more students across our state and develop the next generation of hospitality and tourism industry leaders in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chef Vanhouse. To the next testifier, please state your name and continue with your testimony.
Yes, Chef.
My name is Noah Rosenberger. I'm a ProStart alumni. I graduated from high school in 2022 along with the program. I am from Sauk Rapids Race High School. In 2022, my team took first at state in the restaurant management competition and went forward to the national competition in Washington, D.C., and placed second in the nation. With that, I was able to meet many professionals in the industry through ProStart, alongside at the national level, also at the state level. My instructor has introduced me to the ACF chefs chapter down here in Minneapolis, where I was able to meet many chefs throughout our greater metro area and the state area, and have been able to get hands-on experience in professional kitchens. This past year, I applied for scholarships through the ACF and was awarded the Toby Landgraf Leadership Scholarship alongside ACF Student Chef of the Year.
Wow.
I would love to put full support into 1240 just because of how many great opportunities it provides not only to me, but students around the state. One of my favorite success stories is of Roosevelt High School down here in the metro, which is one of the only Minneapolis school district schools that offers ProStart, and how the teacher, Ben Ringstorff, was able to start his own 501c and have a catering company that his students run and are able to provide meals to various companies, events, and meetings that are needed, and it helps provide better experiences to his students, because the money he creates from that catering company goes directly back into his classroom. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your testimony. Congratulations on your accomplishments. Any other members of the audience that would like to testify? It doesn't look like there's a lot left. Representative Senator Murray is the first one with a question.
Thank you, Lead Baker, for bringing this bill. Mr. Rassenberger has quickly become my favorite lobbyist here at the Capitol. This is my third meeting with him. His enthusiasm and the enthusiasm for the other students I got a chance to meet with just really made me fall in love with the program. The program that he spoke about at Roosevelt High School is in my district. There was a lot of great things I heard about. You know, they, as he talked about, have this catering business. They're hoping to open a cafe within their school where they can sell the food that they make, and they are also working, they have a garden, and they're working to incorporate more and more food that they grow. So I just thought that was a great mixture of so many things that we need our young people to be involved in. One of the things they also shared was just about the way that they have used the cooking class as a way to build community within their school. Lots of different cultures, races are represented within their student population, and so he makes sure to incorporate recipes from different cultures, and I think, you know, we can all agree that food is a great way to learn about each other, connect with one another. So I'm just a huge fan of this program, and I think it's a really reasonable ask, Mr. Baker. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Lead Baker and to the chefs. We've got about 35 minutes left, so. But fortunately, my stomach is growling a little bit because of talking about food. So I think we'll maybe won't add that much. But you know, thank you for this program, and what a great opportunity to you know, just another way of inspiring young people to get into another career area. And as somebody that's on the front side of this industry, I farm, and so. You know, in some ways, you're using my products that are going out. And, you know, as something that I have advocated for in a long time is, you know, cooking from the, or when you cook, using the products on the outside of the grocery store, not the center aisles. And, you know, not that there's a problem with the center aisles, but usually the outside is where I would say you actually cook, where you prepare the meals, where you learn to take a you know, really cooking it, starting from scratch. And I think it's a much better, you know, healthier way to live. And, you know, I think it's a great opportunity to do that. And, you know, this is, I think, just a part of that. And, you know, inspiring young people to get involved in another industry. And, you know, we've heard quite a lot about that today, the various bills, you know, trying to inspire in different areas. We've heard from CNAs. We've heard from probably some people that maybe be going into the teaching field, you know, areas that they didn't know, that maybe they didn't know they were interested, or maybe they were, and were able to build on that. So, but congratulations on your accomplishment. And I do have one question, though. your jackets are buttoned on different directions. I don't know if that's just personal preference or is that the seniority.
No, no, so. It's they're
to the test.
Mr. Chair, thank you. It's they're double breasted on purpose, so if I spill, I can.
Okay. So I wasn't sure if it was a seniority thing or something. So
not at all.
Thank you.
Representative Nelson just illuminated the secret, right?
Yeah.
Any other additional comments or questions from the committee? Okay. Representative Baker, please close on your bill.
Yeah, thank you again, Mr. Chair. This is, again, I want to say this is a very, very small ask. If there was ever a chance where we could actually round up in this case, we would do this because we could do this really, really well. It's about 5,000, give or take, on average for a school. And if we can start these new schools up with this, Hospitality Minnesota, who, again, our executive director, Liz, is right over here, too, for any other questions, has done a really good job with this along with the foundation. And we just want to continue this program. We were lucky to have this funded a couple years ago under Chair Knorr's leadership. And we are developing leaders, young people that once they get a taste of what it's like to be in a kitchen and you get to work with your hands in such a creative manner. I have been at the competitions down here at the River Center. I have seen the teams and how intense they are. It is fun watching the accredited chefs watch and observe the kids just really try to figure out where do they belong in this team and how they work together and how they don't and sometimes where things don't go as well as they had hoped to. But it's an amazing process. I hope we can find room for this in this very important program in our bill this year. So, Mr. Chair and others, thank you for hanging out with us this long. And chefs, thank you so much for being here today, too. With that, I hope that we can lay this over.
All right. I renew my motion that House File 1240 be laid over not amended, but for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And with that, it is laid over. Seeing no other additional business in front of us, meeting adjourned. Have a great weekend.